Pirate's Proposal by Diana Lane. Narrated by Rebecca Lynch.
Chapter 1. Early Summer, 1719, The Bahamas. Captain Gina Santini needed a man, and she'd have him before the night became dawn. Not just any man. Nay, the one she needed had wavy hair the color of bourbon, a well-trimmed goatee, and a jagged scar on his left cheek, according to her first mate, who was dogging at her feet like a cur protecting his moldy scrap of food. Long used to the stench of unwashed bodies, she barely took notice of the smells as she pushed her way into the pirate haven called the Boar's Head. Pausing inside the door, she squinted through the smoke from cheaply made candles and burning cheroots in search for her victim. "Do you see him?" she asked Mickey, who puffed to a stop behind her. There, in the corner, she spied a tousled head of burnished colored hair. Her fingers wrapped around the hilt of her sword, itching to pull the long blade and hold it at the dirty thief's throat.
"I believe he is there, no?"
Without waiting for an answer, she pushed forward through the crowded tables full of men, ripe with the smell of sweat and sea, and heavily perfumed winches who serve them.
"Aye, that looks to be him,"
Mickey confirmed, still at her heels.
"Though I can't say for certain till we're closer."
The man sat alone in the corner, his back to the wall, a tankard of ale wrapped in his hand. He took his time turning his gaze up to her as she marched to a stop inches from the edge of his table. Surprisingly, a slow grin spread over his face. Just the tip of his scar poked from the top of his beard, which, unlike what Mickey had said, was full and bushy and not the neatly trimmed goatee she expected. The fact he'd not yet shaved told her he'd likely made port just before her and had not yet had a chance to see to himself. His ship, small and fast, should have handily beaten hers, but she'd pushed her large frigate hard, running full sails even through a gale. Her men had thought she was possessed, but none dared argue, knowing she'd avenge the wrong done to them. The scar barely took her notice, distracted as she was by how his white teeth contrasted with his sun-darkened face. She would have thought him older, yet an older pirate was more likely to have dark-stained teeth from a fondness of tobacco and hard liquor. Everything about this plunderer bespoke a man in his prime.
"Captain Santini,"
he said with a wave of his hand,
"care to join me?"
"Join ye,"
Mickey barked before she could answer.
"Ye scurvy cur, how could ye ask such a thing?"
"Ah, Mickey,"
the captain greeted.
"Nice to see you."
Mickey had met the captain previously in port and had therefore been useful in locating the man. But now he was found, she didn't want Mickey interfering with her rights as a captain.
"Thank you, Mickey. You can go enjoy a pint now."
He frowned but responded with a respectful,
"Aye, captain,"
before heading to the bar. Warily, she turned back to the captain and studied him, wondering how he knew her name. One pirate often looked like the other, sunburned and scruffy, but she was certain they'd never met. She would have remembered that pretty smile, hidden though it was behind those overgrown whiskers. No matter, she had business at hand. Flattening her palms on the table, she bent low and said through tight lips,
"That was my haul you stole, and I want it back."
His smile didn't waver. Was he going to try to charm his way out of his skullduggery? If so, she'd have to inform Captain Charles the Charmer that his rumored talents would not work on her. He leaned forward on his elbows and brought his face close to hers. She resisted the inclination to back away.
"I can never resist an easy catch,"
he said in an accent that bore traces of Britain. Her skin quivered, her nostrils flared. Yet as she met his bold stare, she sucked in a breath. She thought she saw something there she recognized. Did she know him after all? She searched her memory. To her knowledge, she'd never met him. She recovered from the moment and continued.
"Easy for you to say. The gypsy doll had already stopped that merchant ship."
"Aye, your gun-laden frigate does have its uses. Being fast is not one."
"The advantage will be mine when I blow your dinky little sloop out of the water."
"Captain, are you insulting the size?" of my ship?
The obvious sexual overtone felt like a physical caress. It somehow felt familiar. Provocative. She gave herself a mental shake. It's not the size of your ship that's in question. You stole what was mine. Her insides burned. His actions had humiliated her, angered her men. As a female captain, it was hard enough to maintain control. Only her promise for justice had brought an uneasy truce and avoided a possible mutiny.
I but stole what you planned to steal, not what you had stolen.
That ship was mine. She pounded a fist on the wooden table. My men had our grappling hooks on her. And they would take back what he stole if he would not cooperate. Already she had men watching his ship, prepared to stop him if he tried to offload and sell the goods. Unaffected by her outburst, he fingered her dark hair so long it brushed the tabletop.
But alas, you are too slow, my Italian beauty.
Her scalp tingled from the contact. Deliberately, she ignored the sensual pool. She tugged her hair from his grasp and straightened to her full height, her hand once again on the hilt of her sword. Anger, swift and raging as a sea squall, swept through her. That was her booty, damn it. She needed the money. Otherwise, how would her father survive? She choked back her wrath. So you will not do the thing that is right and give me back the spoils?
Surely you do not believe the falsehood that there is honor among thieves.
Humiliation warred with her indignation and won. She made her expression hard when she promised, Since you do not believe in honor, I will have no qualms about blowing your ship out of the water. She spun to leave, but his hand snaked out quickly and grabbed her arm, bringing her to a sudden stop. With her free hand, she had already pulled a knife out of her belt, ready to stab him when he spoke.
Hang on, love,
he said, amusement evident in his voice.
Careful with that little sticker. You might poke a hole in me.
That's the idea.
Don't be running away so fast now.
His implication she was a coward pricked at her already punctured pride. Forcing that hard-to-swallow lump past her throat, she faced him, too conscious of his large hand wrapped around her wrist, inexplicably wondering how such a hand would feel on other parts of her body, and then wondering why she'd have such a damning thought. She'd dealt with male captains for years now, and none had this effect on her. What was it about this captain and his familiarity?
You, senor, are either very brave or very foolish. Stay and find out,
he challenged. She tugged her wrist away, relieved he let it go. It truly would have been a shame to slice such a capable hand off his arm. You will not goad me into staying. I am going to prepare my men to blow up your ship. To her surprise, he laughed. You think I jest?
You can't start a fight here in a safe harbor,
he said, still chuckling. He was right, and the knowledge made him cocky. She pushed words out between clenched teeth.
I'll wait until you leave, then.
Her threat did little to remove his smile.
Don't be so hasty. I'm willing to discuss business with you.
You'll return my property. The question brought the slightest reaction from him, so little she might have imagined it.
Sit, sit,
he offered. She ignored him and he shrugged and continued.
I followed you, you know. I stole your booty for a reason.
Do you have a death wish? What possible reason?
To get your attention.
The stupidity of his remark robbed her speech as surely as his men had stolen her haul. At her silence, he said,
Come, have a seat, share a pint with me, and I'll explain.
I see nothing to explain such an irrational claim.
I have your attention, don't I?
She sank into the chair and conceded his point with a nod. An odd way to bring you to my notice. He motioned to a tavern wench who threw Gina a sullen look. Obviously, the maid saw the money she'd hoped to make off the captain later that evening disappearing now that Gina was here. Charles ordered and then tipped the wench enough to bring a smile back to her face as she took his empty mug away. Generous, Gina commented.
Wanted to make sure she didn't poison you.
With an amused grin, he settled back in his chair and said,
I've heard you are hard to persuade. so I needed to do something drastic to get your attention.
And what is it you wish from me?
Surely a man such as yourself need not go to such elaborate measures for a woman's attention.
A wry look crossed his face.
I'm not after your womanly attention. I'm interested in a deal of another kind.
Amazingly, his remark bristled her back. Briefly, she wondered how she must look to him with her breeches and sword. Would he like her if she were the kind of woman a seafaring man could come home to at the end of a long voyage? She blinked at the bizarre thought, and brought her attention back to the conversation.
What sort of deal?
Your services.
Signor, you are trying to insult my intelligence. My patience is wearing thin, she warned.
I want you and me to join forces and go after a common target.
For?
Profit, of course.
Money to be made sounded attractive.
Go on.
The Spanish are moving a great shipment of gold to pay their troops in this war of alliances they are about to lose.
Ah, the Spaniards. Always fighting with someone.
This time, King Philip V is trying to claim the throne of Italy.
Me? She shrugged. I have not been to Italy since I was a little girl. Italy, Spain, England, France. Always someone fighting.
And when they do, there is gold for us pirates. More than my dinky little sloop can carry.
So, you have use for a large, well-armed frigate.
A twinge of seduction at the possible opportunity pulled the question from her mouth. Excitement glimmered in his chocolate-colored eyes.
Most definitely.
She frowned.
The Spaniards. They will be well-armed.
And all those cannon aboard your ship will be useful for something other than blowing my ship out of the water.
His smile was so mesmerizing it drew a reluctant smile from her. No wonder he was called Charles the Charming. Still, she didn't want him to think he had the upper hand and there were yet unanswered questions.
I'm thinking I would take greater pleasure in blasting your ship given the circumstances.
He held his hands wide, making him look so innocent.
And lose the opportunity to take such a haul of gold.
The wench brought the ale just then, but Gina was reluctant to take a drink. Many an unsuspecting man had been drugged through his drink and found himself on a ship bound for Shanghai. She pushed the mug to one side and leaned forward on her elbows.
"'Tis a tempting offer, I will admit. But why me?"
"Why not?"
Suspicion niggled at her. "Surely you have other cronies willing to help."
"You're jesting, love. What pirate is really trustworthy?"
"Exactly. Why, then, should I trust you? And furthermore, why are you willing to trust me?"
"There's an element of danger in each of our ventures. I'm already taking a risk."
When she would have spoken, he cut her off.
"Why am I willing to gamble on you, specifically?"
He took a drink, not having the same aversion to his ale.
"I know you need the money more than most."
She stiffened.
"What makes you think such a thing?"
Something flickered in his dark eyes.
"What pirate hasn't heard the tale of your father's illness, and how you left school to take over the family business, so to speak?"
"There is nothing so special about what I did. Any child would have done the same."
He shrugged.
"Doubtful. Pirate children are no more loyal than pirates themselves. Hell, most pirates don't even know their offspring."
That was true. Not many captains took their families on their ships with them. That her father was once a privateer, so that what he did was technically legal, didn't make it any less unusual that he sailed with his wife and daughter.
"Most pirates who get sick or injured end up beggars and die of starvation sooner than of their disease. Your father is a lucky man to have a daughter brave and strong enough to give up her dreams of a home and family."
"I have no dreams of home and family. The sea is all I know."
The words were no sooner out of her mouth than she wondered why she revealed so much to him.
"Aye, you totaled your first steps on the deck of the Gypsy Doll."
The man seemed to know too much about her. Even his eyes bespoke knowledge and familiarity.
Who was he?
Whatever you think you know about me, I'm still a stranger to you.
He shook his head, sighed, and took one of her hands in his. Before she could pull out of his grasp, he surprised her by saying,
Ah, Gina, you wound me.
She blinked. She had no idea how to respond. He saved her the trouble.
You really do not remember me.
Frowning, she tilted her head to one side to study him. Should I?
Mayhap it is all this bristly hair on my face.
He rubbed his beard.
But I was sailing hard so you would not catch me.
She smiled, trying to picture him without the beard. Your eyes.
Or maybe it's the name,
he cut in. Mayhap this will help. When you knew me, I was called Chuck. Or Chucky. He grimaced.
Charles? Chuck?
Chucky? She gasped.
No, not... Aye, now you remember. I will admit I'm crushed. It seems you would have remembered the lad whose bunk you once climbed into to prove your undying love.
Heat rushed to her face, but she forced herself not to drop her gaze. If he knew about that, he had to be Chuck. The boy of whom she'd once been enamored had grown into a fine specimen of a man. When last she saw him, he barely had whiskers, and he was as skinny as he was tall.
But where? What happened?
Not long after she'd left for school, she'd received a letter from her father. In it, he'd mentioned Chucky had disappeared. Her father suspected his newly promoted first mate had been shanghaied. But now he was a pirate captain?
It's a long story, suited for neither the place nor the night. Right now I have an offer for you.
The gold. Her mind jerked back from the memories. Anger that she'd been duped, that she hadn't recognized the only man she'd ever loved, girlish infatuation or not, washed through her. She didn't know if she was angrier at him or herself.
You're counting on a childhood fancy to make me trust you.
Oh, but it hadn't felt like a fancy. The night she snuck out of her cabin and into his. The night before she was sent off to that hated school for girls. The kiss they'd shared. Clearly, he remembered. But this was too sudden. She didn't know how she felt. About him, about his idea, about the way he'd gone about getting her attention. Anger, happiness, suspicion, elation, too many emotions bombarded her. She, who was used to an iron control over herself, did not like all of these conflicting feelings attacking her.
Are you hungry? Let's order food and we can discuss my proposal.
Proposal. What an interesting word choice. Once, she'd hoped for a proposal of a different kind. Humiliation resurfaced. She had to get away, breathe fresh air where she could think straight. She brought forth her card-playing face.
I think not.
Briefly, his eyes widened. He quickly covered his surprise with a charming smile.
You're missing a great opportunity.
It will be my loss.
She was doing the right thing, she told herself. Instinct told her it would be dangerous to get tangled with Chuck, now known as Captain Charles the Charming.
You just lost a shipful of booty. You're willing to lose more?
Oh, there was the rub. She wanted those goods he'd stolen, needed them. Without that haul, she'd be hard-pressed to restock her ship, or take care of her father.
I'll make you a bargain,
she said at last, choking the words through a throat squeezed tight.
You deliver the booty you stole from me, and then we'll discuss your proposal.
Gina found Mickey at the bar and dragged him away from his latest pint without another glance at Charles, although she was quite aware of his gaze on her.
It's really him,
she said to Mickey once they were outside the tavern.
Captain Charles is Chucky. Did you know?
Saints be praised. Nay, I didn't know. I've shared a pint or two with him, but never did he let on he was Chuck,
Mickey confessed.
That scar in the beard changed his looks. He barely had hair on his face last time I saw him on the gypsy doll. Did he say what happened to him?
No, he didn't.
They turned on the sandy path which led to the wharf, the warm salt air blowing away the smells of the boar's head.
Babo said he thought Chuck had been shanghaied.
Aye, your father, he's the right of it, I'm thinking. Several young sailors went missing from that port that year.
But now he captains his own ship? How did that happen?
He did not tell ye?
No.
Was it necessary for her to know in order to consider his offer?
Mickey continued, Most men shanghaied do not live long enough to escape.
Gina stopped in shock. Are you suggesting he jumped ship? He shrugged.
It's been known to happen.
But he'd just been made first mate.
She said to his retreating back. Mickey came to a stop and turned to face her.
Mayhap he got a better offer.
She shook her head.
I find that hard to believe. A better offer than sailing for my father?
Aye, it has been an honor to sail for you both.
His words warmed her heart, but a warm heart did little to help her make a decision.
Will Captain Charles return the goods, or will we blow his ship out of the water?
She grinned at Mickey's enthusiasm.
He didn't say whether he would or wouldn't.
He rubbed his hands together.
It be blow him up, then.
Not quite so fast.
What has the charmer's charm gotten to you? Did we push the gypsy doll hard for no reason?
Gina wasn't so sure she liked his implications. Then again, she had pushed both men and ship hard. He had a proposition for me.
And ye walked away from that table without running him through.
What?
She widened her eyes.
No, no, not that kind of proposition. He wants our help in attacking a Spanish frigate.
You did not agree, did ye?
Shock threaded through Mickey's voice.
Those Spaniards are formidable.
I neither agreed nor declined. I told him I'd hear him out if he returned our goods.
Captain, meaning no disrespect. But are ye daft?
A promise to hear him out is worth it if he returns our goods.
Do ye think he's trustworthy, then?
At this point, you could say as well as me.
Once she would have believed anything Chuck said, but Charles? She had no idea if she could trust him, or who he'd become because of where he'd been.
Caution would be the word,
Mickey advised.
See, I will be very cautious.
She greeted the men on guard as they walked up the gypsy doll's gangplank. The rest of the men were on shore leave, rotating out in small groups to keep watch on the ship.
If he brings the booty to the ship in the morning, that will be the first step to prove he honors his word.
Or the first step to set a trap.
She appreciated Mickey's distrust ran as deep as her own. We've avoided traps before.
Aye, we've always sailed with fair weather luck.
You aren't going to start in with that doll again, are you?
How else would you explain it? The gypsy doll has never been sunk or captured.
The captain having brains has nothing to do with our luck.
Aye, a smart captain helps. Even a magic doll cannot help if a fool is at the helm. And ye be no fool, captain.
She chuckled, knowing he still thought the doll played a more important role in the ship's safety than her decisions.
Ah, Mickey, you are so good for my spirits.
They reached her cabin and she opened the door.
Good night.
Good night, Captain.
Once in the cabin, Gina's gaze went to the doll sitting in the middle of her bunk. The dark eyes and her painted face matched her dark hair, and she wore a white shirt slightly yellowed with age, and a bright gypsy skirt faded only a little by time. Gina's grandfather had made the doll from whalebone after his wife, Gina's grandmother, had been tragically murdered. He'd carved a rose in the center of the doll's chest in tribute to his wife, Rosa. Gina's grandfather had been talented, that was certain. The doll,
which Gina had named Rosa after her grandmother, was a lasting work of art. On her deathbed, Gina's mother had given the doll to Gina, explaining it would protect her from those who would betray her. Originally, Gina's grandfather had asked a gypsy witch for a spell of protection on the eve of his daughter's wedding. Her grandfather hadn't trusted that Gina's father truly loved her mother and that he'd be true to her. He was a pirate, after all. Somehow the doll had absorbed the spell. Gina wasn't sure how that happened. But she couldn't discount the idea that the doll had some sort of power. Sometimes the stare from her dark painted eyes seemed disturbingly real. The curse apparently worked. The only man Gina had had a slight interest in, once she'd been convinced Chuck was lost to her forever, had died from an infection sustained from a sword wound. She later learned the man had been wooing her toward marriage so he could take over her ship. Gina was never certain if the doll's curse or simple misfortune had caused his demise. Either way, she was grateful she hadn't fallen into his trap and lost both her heart and her ship. Of course, as far as men and true love went, how honorable a man could one find among pirates? Men like her father, with character and a strong sense of the code, were rare. Whether it was the doll, as Mickey touted, her cleverness, as she'd rather believe, or just plain luck, Gina had avoided any catastrophes in spite of plots against her. She picked up the doll.
"If only you were more useful," she said. "If you'd had the ability to save my mother from the infection that took her life."
She had been 12 when she watched her mother take her last breath. Gina had held the magic doll in her arms as she clung to her dying mother's hand. Alas, the doll didn't have power over life and death. Still, something that protected her from disloyalty wasn't a bad thing to have around, she supposed. Not as useful as a brain, though. And Gina did have the brains to avoid marching blindly into a trap. Captain Charles, no matter how charming, was going to have to prove himself before she joined in his venture. Hanging her sword on the bedpost, she crawled into her bunk fully clothed. It was never safe to wear bedclothes on a ship full of men, even if most were on shore leave. She hadn't worn a nightdress since she was a child. She picked up the doll again to study it in the slight bit of moonlight that came through her porthole. She couldn't deny Rosa seemed to vibrate with some sort of mysterious power, and always felt warm. Not cold as one would expect a bone doll to feel. Even with her pragmatism, Gina couldn't totally denounce the magic. Of course, with gypsy blood running through her veins, she really had no choice. Superstition was part of her heritage. Chapter 2. The sun was still hiding when a loud thump on deck woke Gina. She came alert in an instant. Snatching her sword, she bounded out of bed and rushed out of her cabin, rounded the corner, and jolted to a stop. Captain Charles stood on deck supervising his crewmen as they stacked crates.
"Your spoils, my lady,"
he said with a wave of his arm and a bow worthy for a queen. This morning he looked more like the Chuck she remembered, as he'd shaved the bushy beard to a neat goatee. The scar on his cheek, more visible with less facial hair, wasn't as detracting as she would have thought. She resisted the urge to smile and ignored her relief that he honored his word. He'd stolen those damn goods from her. There was no need to be happy at their return. He only oozed charisma to cover his crime and win her help. She stared at him until she was certain she could speak without her lips twitching in answer to his smile.
"Congratulations."
She used the booming voice she reserved for throwing out orders to her sailors.
"You held to your word."
At her tone, his beguiling expression barely wavered.
"And did you think I wouldn't?"
His smugness compelled her to hang on to her dignity.
It doesn't surprise me, no. It only makes sense, if you want my help with your crazy scheme, that you pacify me by giving back what is rightfully mine.
Her words wiped the smile off his face. Obviously, he'd been counting on exploiting her former infatuation with him.
If it were yours, then it would be on your ship, I'm thinking.
It is on my ship, she pointed out.
Where it would have been in the first place if not for a thieving captain.
But aren't we all thieves, my lovely pirate captain?
Excellent point. Exactly the reason I shouldn't trust anything you say.
And she should go about her business as usual, not put faith in his confounded proposal.
Even as I've proved, I'm trustworthy.
Before she could respond, he added,
Hello, Mickey.
Gina spun to find her first mate behind her.
Captains.
He nodded to them both, and then, with a sideways look to Charles, addressed her.
You gonna let them leave before we check over the booty?
Charles laughed.
So much for proving my trustworthiness.
Distrust keeps a person alive.
Gina stated the obvious. With a wave of his arm, Charles said,
By all means, check to make sure I have not cheated you out of goods that were not yours to begin with.
She poked her finger in his chest.
It was ours in the first place. We took all the risks.
She turned to Mickey.
After you check, start gathering the things I need to take to my father.
Not today, I hope, Charles said.
She looked at him with lifted brows.
Excuse me?
You're supposed to meet with me. We agreed once I delivered the goods, you'd meet with me and hear my offer.
It won't take more than 5 minutes for me to listen and tell you no.
For the first time, he showed a hint of irritation with a scowl.
So confident you'll refuse.
You think I'd enter into an agreement with a pirate? Do I look like a fool?
She heard Mickey chuckle as he walked away. Charles moved closer and lowered his voice.
I think you look beautiful, love, even if you did just tumble out of bed and your hair is all mussed.
With both hands, he lifted her hair hanging on either side of her face and smoothed it back behind her shoulders. His touch, light as the ocean breeze, made her shiver. She felt out of breath and had to take a step back. He'd certainly perfected his skills over the years. It was rumored, Mickey had told her, that Charles the Charmer could sweet-talk the sirens away from their rocks. She believed it. Oh, had he shown but a taste of that talent years earlier, when she'd revealed her infatuation in a tongue-tied rush of garbled words on the eve of her departure for boarding school. But alas, perhaps what he'd truly exhibited all those years ago was compassion. Any bit of encouragement would have made leaving for school that much harder. His laughing dismissal of her confession had been quite enough to harden her heart, giving her one less thing to pine for while she'd been away from everything she ever knew. Mayhap he had known it would be so. But no. She could not afford to imbue him with such thoughtfulness, not when there were decisions to be made. When his comment on her disheveled state failed to provoke a reaction from her, he raised an eyebrow. Apparently nonplussed, his customary charm had failed. You act stalwart, love, but I think you're an intelligent woman who won't turn down a chance to make money. She strolled 3 paces away to add distance between them.
I said I'd meet with you, and I will. As a matter of fact, we can discuss your scheme right now.
Now?
Charles looked around.
Are you inviting me to your cabin?
I beg your pardon.
In spite of her best efforts, the memory sharpened of the last time they'd been in a cabin together. His very small first mate's cabin after he'd been newly promoted. No, she clamped down her teeth. She was not going to remember that. Charles was speaking again. She must concentrate.
Need a flat surface and parchment to illustrate my plans.
Flat surface? Immediately her treacherous mind went to her bunk.
Your cabin has a desk. Star charts.
She was finding it nearly impossible to control her wayward thoughts this morning. She needed him to leave.
My cabin, no, not a good idea.
Ah, love, he said with a sly smile. Methinks you have a wicked mind to suspect my intentions are less than honorable.
Of course she had a wicked mind. She was the one who had entered his cabin uninvited, a fact he no doubt would never forget. He'd been the honorable one. Then. And now? He'd only been thinking of star charts. Heat rushed to her cheeks. As casually as she could, she asked,
Where had you in mind for us to meet?
If not your cabin.
He let his voice trail suggestively.
Then the Bull's Head is a suitable place to plan nefarious deeds.
Meaning the tavern was loud and noisy and the chances of being overheard were slim.
What time?
Will you be back from your father's by this evening?
I am not going to his island today. I have other business to attend.
Like selling the booty now on her ship and buying additional supplies for her father. Like selling the booty now on her ship and buying additional supplies for her father. Special items beyond staples, such as the hand-rolled cigars he preferred, the bottles of fine-aged wine.
Then let us meet this evening at dusk.
So late.
I'd like to have supper with you.
Supper?
It will give us time to catch up on our years apart. Nothing wrong with mixing business with pleasure.
To her, it sounded like torture.
Pleasure for whom?
She couldn't resist asking.
Ouch, my lady, you wound me deeply.
He splayed a hand over his heart.
Your fondness for me seems to have waned over the years.
The very tips of her ears were burning now. She wished he had forgotten. But how could he? Her stupidity was no doubt emblazoned on his brain as well as hers. And how ungentlemanly of him to refer to her young girl's infatuation.
We all grow up.
She leaned on her sword, the tip on the deck,
and forget the silliness of youth.
You definitely grew up.
Charles slid closer. Oblivious of her sword, he took her free hand and brought it to his lips.
Perhaps over our supper, I can bring back some of your memories.
Resist him, she told herself. He's only using his manly appeal to get what he wants.
I see no use for that.
What I see is that, in our time apart, your heart has grown cold. Tonight I will attempt to persuade you that business with me would be a pleasure.
She forced out a calming breath.
You are so full of whale dung.
He chuckled.
Tonight, dear Gina, you'll sing a different tune.
He turned and strode away, pausing to give last-minute instructions to his men. Gina willed her heart to slow, resisting the idea that he intrigued her as much as when she'd been a love-besotted ninny. After Gina and Mickey took inventory of the booty, she spent the day lining up buyers and purchasing basic supplies for her next voyage. It was harder these days than it used to be, with King George having appointed a governor determined to run the pirates out of the Bahamas. Still, she knew the right people, had the right papers, and regulations had at last been lightened. She managed to get a nice price for her goods. She also found a box of her father's favorite contraband cigars. Having lost the love of his life, as well as being no longer able to roam the seas, he took little pleasures where he could find them. Gina helped all she could, wanting to make her father's life as happy as possible. As night approached, she found herself debating whether to change into clean clothes for her meeting with Charles. She had nothing more than an assorted selection of shirts and breeches. The dresses she'd been forced to wear at the all-girls school had been left behind without a second's thought. She couldn't deny that seeing Charles resurrected old feelings. Feelings that made her want to look her best. However, her obligations to her father, her ship, and her men couldn't be risked by trusting emotions. To be successful in a world of cutthroat men, she had to stay level-headed and not vain. Still, it was as easy to be level-headed in clean clothes as dirty. She pulled off the shirt and breeches she'd been wearing the last 2 days, then poured water from her pitcher into the tin basin and used a cloth to wash off the worst of the grime. She'd rather have clean skin than cover up the smell with heavy perfumes. As often as she could, she indulged in a bath. While she dressed, she steeled herself against every argument he would lay before her. Her suspicious nature, the one that had kept her alive this long, reared up faster than a sudden squall when she entered the Boar's Head and located him. He sat huddled at the corner table with two men, deep in conversation. More help for his venture? Crew? Or something else? Watching them, she was inclined to think they fell into the something else category. The two men cast furtive glances over their shoulders, obviously alert to being overheard, or worse, attacked. Charles, on the other hand, looked deceptively at ease. Charles proved her assumption correct a few seconds later when he looked up and searched the tavern. After a glance toward the entrance, he brought the meeting to an end with a shake of his head. The men stood and stomped off, frowns furrowing their faces. Gina wondered what they had been discussing. More deals Charles was making? Something to do with what he planned to propose to her. Of course, everyone had to be careful these days, even though the martial law Governor Rogers had enacted was over. The hangings of pirates who disagreed with the new governor served as motivation for the other pirates to at least give the appearance of reforming their ways. But there was always the chance for those men who had truly given up pirating to share damning information with the king's men for a gold coin. Charles stood as she made her way through the tavern and waited until she slid into one of the recently vacated seats, the wood still warm from the previous occupant. Reaching across the table, he took her hand and brushed a kiss across her fingers before he sat back down.
"Good evening, my lady captain. You're looking lovely."
She steepled her hands to stop the tingling, but, otherwise, refused to be charmed.
"Who were your two friends?"
"Suppliers," he answered without hesitation. He sounded convincing enough, but she didn't quite believe him. They didn't look the type to be selling supplies.
"Mayhap you don't know what sort of supplies I seek."
"Something to do with your scheme, I suppose."
He arched an eyebrow.
"You would suppose right. But ask me no more, so I will not lie."
"Why lie? Aren't I part of the plan?"
"Not yet."
She leaned forward, lowering her voice.
"Don't trust me, hmm?"
He smiled.
"Not yet."
Giving a short laugh, she settled back into her chair, prepared to listen.
"All right, then. What exactly do you want from me?"
She regretted the words before they were fully out of her mouth. He gave her body a measuring look, then broadened his smile.
"Do not look so stricken," he said. "I will not respond as you are dreading, tempting though it may be."
It felt like he was feeding her bad turtle soup.
"No improper remarks or actions."
"Now that I can't promise. You might have an urge to slap me before the evening ends."
"Anything improper and you'll get more than a slap," she promised.
"You would do me bodily harm. That truly surprises me."
"Think you I would welcome your advances?"
"You once would have."
His stare almost compelled her to admit she was lying. Instead, she forced herself not to drop her gaze or crawl under the table to hide. She had known the subject was bound to come up. Attempting to swallow her embarrassment, she managed to say,
That was long?
Not so long, methinks. It was little more than 5 years gone, and that was no child who climbed into my bunk.
She felt like tinder set on fire with a spark from a flint. Confound the man! Why did he have to revive those memories?
Because he thought it would serve his purpose, of course.
You're doing yourself no favor to bring up my indiscretion.
No. It is a rather fond memory to me. 'Tis a heady thing to go to your bunk and find a warm, willing woman.
Woman?
She spat against her better judgment.
You said I was not more than a child.
You know I had to lie. You were of marriageable age. Your father seemed to suddenly realize it as well, and decided you had to leave. He wanted you to make a better marriage than to a lowly seaman. Yes, she'd known, but despite her pleas, her father would not be dissuaded.
His idea obviously did not work. I'm sailing with a ship full of men again, with nary an opportunity to meet more than a seaman.
Which is why you'll like my plan. If it works, you'll never more have to sail. You can stay on dry land and take care of your father. Find a good husband.
His remark brought forth a snort. Who says I want a husband?
I thought that's what all unmarried women want.
Unmarried women wanted marriage.
She refrained from reaching across the table to slap him. She'd grown quite used to the freedom of having no man, not even her father telling her how to live.
How many unmarried women do you know who captain a pirate ship?
Your point?
A husband would simply be too restrictive after that, don't you think?
He cleared his throat, obviously holding back a retort. After giving her a speculative look, he at last said,
Fine. Forget the restrictive husband part, but you do wish to take care of your father,
I? How did he know that was her wish?
I do feel obligated to provide Babo comfort in these years, see?
Uncomfortable with the subject, she decided to probe the past, but this time his past, not hers. She placed her palms on the table and drew a silent breath.
Where did you go?
There were always those who said you jumped a ship.
Babo has always been convinced you were shanghaied.
So you kept tabs on me through your father, did you?
Nonplussed at his shrewdness, she stuttered.
He only mentioned you when you disappeared. I certainly never asked.
Charles gave her a look that said he knew she was lying. There are those who did think I jumped ship.
The thought drew an indignant denial.
No one in their right mind would think such.
It pleases me to know you are still loyal.
Mayhap that means you will find it in yourself to trust me? She recognized her error immediately.
I only say that from the man I knew you to be.
Years have passed.
I have no idea the man you are now.
He held his hands wide.
I am but the same.
You would like for me to believe that. You only bring up the past to persuade me.
He smiled.
Is it working?
She sent him a cynical look.
I suppose not, he sighed. Perhaps a full belly will make you more receptive.
He signaled the tavern wench.
Do not count on it, she warned.
Over their dinner of boiled beef and potatoes, with a loaf of bread shared between them, he outlined his plan, pulled out his charts.
So you want to attack a Spanish galleon?
One that is well armed and ready for war?
And loaded with gold,
he again reminded her.
I have no wish for Spain to take back Italy, she began.
Yes, Italian gypsy that you are, I thought capturing a Spanish ship would have appeal.
Had she but a reason to go back to Italy and learn the gypsy ways. Regretfully, her doll was the only tie she had to her people in the old country.
Appeal or not, 'tis easier confronting merchant ships.
But the reward is greater, and we could use the ruse we used on that merchant ship.
You engage, and I'll sail up on the blind side and board.
What? risk my ship with a one-on-one fight against an armed war galleon.
My ship is not fully outfitted for battle. She's a small transport ship, armed for defense. We can add more cannon to your frigate.
I see you have no aversion to risking the gypsy doll.
But the reward...
Bah! The reward will be worth nothing if my ship is at the bottom of the ocean.
You'll have the Spanish ship in that case. Although you won't need it. If 'tis truly a life with your father you want, there will be enough gold to last him the rest of his lifetime, if you spend wisely enough to last yours as well.
Big promises you make, and big risks.
Have a backbone.
His voice grew harder, mocking.
Pirating is a risky business.
I'm no coward, she snapped.
Have a backbone, indeed.
She tore a chunk off her loaf of bread and mashed it between her fingers.
Your actions say otherwise, since you are hesitating over a sure thing.
Her rising anger made it tempting to spout off a retort. She resisted by tossing the mangled bread on her plate and pushing to her feet.
I will consider it, but don't count on me.
She turned to leave, feeling suddenly stifled, needing to be out of the hot, smoky tavern. The food she'd eaten lay heavy in her stomach. He didn't call for her to stop, and she didn't want to analyze why that bothered her as she pushed her way out of the crowded tavern. Outside, in the cooler night air, she breathed in the sea breeze and felt her emotions settle. Damned emotions. Always a bother when the times required straight thinking. She marched forward, gathering her thoughts. His plan sounded solid, and the opportunity for a good haul promising. But for some reason she distrusted the whole scheme. Suddenly chilled, though the night was warm, she wrapped her arms around her middle. Nay, maybe the truth was she didn't trust herself. She stopped at the pier where the gypsy doll was docked. Did she want to keep sailing? The ship was practically the only home she'd ever known. She'd never considered another option. Her father, with his bad heart, could no longer sail, and she knew no other way to earn money to support them. Certainly nothing at that fancy girls' school in London had taught her any way to earn a living. Only how to be a proper lady. A lot of good that did when she faced another ship's cannon, or the sword blade of a man intent on murder. What use then was knowing how to properly pour tea? She could neither sew nor cook, despite her teacher's best efforts. So earning an income as a seamstress or a cook was not an option. Nor was being a tavern wench, who had to take men to bed to earn a living wage. Grazie, no, that was not for her. Pirating earned a decent living, 'twas true, but after paying the men their share and keeping the ship in good repair, a living was all she earned. Nothing extra to put aside so she could quit the sea. She foresaw many years of pirating, unless she landed a ship with a huge bounty. And now one was being offered to her, if Charles could be believed. If only it didn't seem more than a too-good-to-be-true opportunity. She heard footsteps on the wooden pier. She somehow knew it was Charles.
"There's one thing I forgot to add," he said,
coming up behind her. She didn't turn, but continued to stare at her ship.
"What?"
"This."
She felt his hands on her shoulders as he spun her to face him. She barely had time to register his face moving closer before his lips landed on hers, light as the breeze. Perhaps because she didn't shove him away, he grew bolder, pressed his lips more firmly, silently persuading her to kiss him back. She hesitated, then wondered why. Wasn't this really what she wanted? What she'd never stopped wanting all these years. Sacrifice and restraint had been part of who she had become, but at the moment all thoughts of sacrifice or restraint flew away over the sea faster than a seagull diving for his breakfast. She kissed him back. He pulled her closer,
and eagerly her arms wrapped around him with no conscious effort on her part. She answered the urging of his lips, opening her mouth to accept the stroking of his tongue. Just as she was ready to ask him to her cabin, something she never did, he pulled away. It was too reminiscent of what he'd done those years ago, leaving her to feel vulnerable. Had it been he simply hadn't wanted her then? Didn't want her now? Her mouth felt bare and lonely, and she gasped to suck oxygen into her lungs. The rush of air to her brain brought logic to tamp down her disappointment. If he didn't want her, so be it. She could still retain her dignity.
Do you think to persuade me with a kiss?
Did it work? She shoved at him.
Do you think I'm so easily bought?
Watching her with a leery gaze, he took a few steps out of her reach. Nothing about you is easy. Then, smiling, he turned away and proclaimed to the sky as he walked away, I think it worked.
Curse him, thinking one little kiss could persuade her.
But curse him more. She feared he was right.
Chapter 3 Another morning dawned after a night of restless sleep. Gina had done little more than toss and turn in time to the gentle sloshing of the waves against her ship, reliving the kiss, worrying about the proposal. Though weariness dragged her bones, she planned to head to the small neighboring island where her father lived as soon as possible. Most of her crew was on shore leave, spending their share from the booty sold yesterday. She instructed the remaining skeleton crew to pack up half the supplies she'd set aside for her father into the dinghy and lower it to the water. She'd have to make a second trip to take the rest. With the morning, salty, cool breeze ruffling her hair, she picked up the oars. Usually she enjoyed the half-hour trip to her father's tiny island, but today the rhythmic rowing soon grew irritating, agitating her thoughts, making her more anxious to reach shore. She wanted to talk to her father, get his opinion, knowing his judgment wouldn't be clouded with emotion. She would be able to debate with him whether the risk of losing the gypsy doll would be worth the possible reward. He'd never been for her captaining the ship, claiming she should have found a rich husband after her finishing school experience. But finding a man to support them both, whether she wed him or not, seemed too much like prostitution. She couldn't deny the sea life was a lonely life. It wasn't so when she'd sailed with her father. But now, with all the decisions weighing on her shoulders, it was stressful and often fraught with danger. There were times she did fantasize of a home, stability, a family, though she'd never admit to it. Nor would she consider anything else without the means of supporting her father. She'd been hearing of opportunities in the New Americas to the north and south of the islands. Stories of people settling, creating plantations out of the rich, fertile soil of the new land. And yet, what did she know of farming? Still, it couldn't be harder than pirating. Just something new to learn.
If she made a good haul, she could buy some of that land and create a new life for herself and Babo.
Charles's promise of such a rich haul was tempting, but the real possibility of her ship and crew at the bottom of the ocean kept her mood tempered. It was a relief when her oars struck sand. She slid the dinghy up onto the beach and tied the rope on a small pier, noticing a couple of other dinghies tied up as well. The larger piers were a bit north. The island didn't have many residents. And yet those who lived here depended upon supplies from the bigger island, and most had small boats to travel back and forth. She hefted a crate into her arms. The sandy beach turned to craggy rocks with caves dotted along the shoreline. Hard wood and palm trees grew farther inland. Most houses here were small wooden huts with palm frond roofs. Her father's hut was one of the closest to the beach. Too many years sailing, he couldn't get the sea out of his blood. 100 meters inland,
His home came into view when she rounded an outcropping of rocks in a small cave. He was sitting outside under his palm-covered porch, but he wasn't alone. She stopped, gritted her teeth. Blast it all! What was he doing here? Immediately, the feel of his lips came to mind, and the suddenness of him pulling away. The box in her arms grew heavy. She couldn't stand frozen all day holding it. She wiped the frown off her face and replaced it with a pleasant expression. After months away, she didn't want her father's first view of her to be with her face looking as if she'd eaten a sour fruit.
Good. You have help,
she said as she approached, giving her father's appearance a critical eye. Was his hair grayer? Had he lost weight? Both men, lost in conversation, turned at the sound of her voice. Charles immediately jumped to his feet and came over to relieve her of the crate. When his hands brushed hers, their gazes met. She practically dumped the crate into his arms to break the contact. She gave her father a quick hug, as always, disconcerted to feel bones instead of hard flesh of the strong man she remembered from childhood.
"There's more in the boat,"
she said to Charles after he set the box down. She left for the pier with both men following. Experience told her not to argue with Babo about helping. His illness left him feeling useless, and she wouldn't insult him by suggesting he was too weak to help. She handed him the smaller crate with his cigars and wine. Even as she noticed him gasping when he placed the box under the porch, she squelched the urge to dote on him, knowing he'd hate it. Instead, she said to Charles,
"If I'd known you were coming to visit, I'd have sent some supplies with you. It would have saved me making two trips, and I could visit longer."
"I can get the other supplies."
Oh, ho. He was anxious for her to agree with his plan, wasn't he?
"That's so gallant."
She gave him a smile without meaning.
"Will you be leaving at once?"
Instead of the look of surprise she expected, she saw a knowing gleam in his eyes. No one said he was stupid.
"Nay, Gina,"
her father spoke up.
"Charles and I were discussing his grand plans. I would like to hear more of the details, just as soon as I find that wine I know you brought me."
She plopped down on a comfortable woven bamboo chair and waited for her father to dig through the crate and come up with the wine and cigars. He opened the bottle and poured glasses for all.
"Ah, it's been too long,"
he added with a satisfied look. "Wine for breakfast. Nothing better." Gina shook her head and sighed. She couldn't blame her father for his indulgences, away from his friends and the life he loved.
"Did Charles mention his plan includes a great risk to the gypsy doll?"
Fille.
He'd always liked using the Italian word for daughter. It seemed more familiar.
"There be risk in pirating."
He took another sip of wine, a far-off look in his eyes as if he were remembering times past.
"The gypsy doll has always stood us in good stead,"
he said at last.
"She sails with Lady Luck for sure."
Gina's lips twisted. She knew her father believed that her mother's doll had kept the ship safe all these years, protected from those who would do them harm. Same as Mickey.
"But he wants the gypsy doll to directly engage a ship outfitted for war."
"Then outfit yourself for war as well, Fia. Add more cannon and more men."
Mentally, she added up the costs and cringed. But the glimmer in his eyes reminded her of the old days when he was tall and dark and strong. She didn't have the heart to argue with him any more. Her silence left Charles looking smug as he and her father hashed out the details of putting her ship at risk. She might not have the heart to argue with her father, but she certainly had a few things left to say to Charles. Later, after listening to the men for the next hour, she reluctantly agreed that the plan they worked out seemed sound enough, and she could see the genius of her father as a captain. She felt sadness for the loss. She wondered if the same genius could be turned to running a plantation, something to make him feel useful and give him purpose again. She loved seeing her father's face light up, and in that moment, she decided the risk of this crazy venture was worth the possible reward. But she decided, too, she'd keep the information to herself a while longer, just to see what length Charles would travel to get her on his side. At last, he left with a promise to return with the additional supplies.
"What is that smile I see twitching your lips, Fia?"
Babbo asked, once Charles had strolled out of hearing. "I'm imagining the trouble he's going to come against getting those supplies off my ship."
"It's said he has the reputation of a charmer."
She looked at her father. He might live on a little island, but he did keep up with the world. "My men don't think he's so charming since he swiped that booty from beneath us."
"He wanted to get your attention, he told me. I think it worked."
She unclenched her teeth. "See, he certainly got my attention."
"Someone with that boldness will get those supplies, have no doubt."
"You insult my men."
"No insult. I am sure you have worthy men, but Charles is as sharp as a sea serpent. Rest easy, you won't have to make another trip."
A prickle of jealousy stabbed her. Was Charles the son her father had always wanted?
"You were silent while we discussed tactics."
"Listen and learn, you always said," she answered, still feeling annoyed. "You too have it well planned."
"See, it is a good plan. If there's the hall, he says, you might not have to sail again. You can stay and keep an old man company. Find a strapping young man. Like Charles."
His wink lacked any hint of subtlety. She pressed her lips together. Why did everyone want her with a man? "It would be nice to spend time with you, but a man is not something I want. Especially Charles."
"What? Once you pined after him like a seagull that lost a tasty morsel of fish."
Not an image she would have considered, but then another realization chased the image away. "You knew?" He leaned back and crossed his hands over his stomach.
"See, it's the reason I sent you to school, because he was a seaman."
"He's still a seaman."
"See, but a captain now, with grand ambitions."
She shook her head. "Grand delusions, more like." He threw his hands wide, palms up.
"You don't trust him."
"Something doesn't feel right."
"This is little Chuck. He started out as my cabin boy. I practically raised him."
"Doesn't mean he's trustworthy. You still don't know that he didn't jump ship." She tossed out the possibility, though she didn't believe it. Not really.
"He was shanghaied."
Babbo's defense was firm. "So he claims." Gina couldn't help arguing. "Awfully strange he managed to escape and now captains his own ship."
"He is very resourceful. Have him tell you his story sometime."
"And there's a good chance that's just what it is," she muttered, knowing she was never going to win this battle. "A story." In a louder tone, she asked, "How does he know of this big hall?" Her father skirted the question. He leaned forward.
"If he does betray you, he'll get his comeuppance."
At first she thought her father, as weak as he was, meant he'd see to it Charles would suffer if he betrayed her. "What do you... Oh, the doll," she said with dawning realization.
"See, do you still have her?"
"Of course."
"That doll has gotten us out of many a scrape with those seeking to harm us. You take care of her, she'll take care of you."
She couldn't deny the gypsy doll's luck, and he, like Mickey, credited that luck to her mother's doll. Still, she couldn't hide her doubt.
Babo, a doll? What is it about her?
Not an ordinary doll, a doll with a curse. Carved out of bone with your grandfather's own hands,
he reminded her. Somehow knowing that always gave Gina a creepy feeling. She wasn't sure why. It wasn't as if he'd used her grandmother's bones. And yet, strangely, she couldn't deny there was a calming effect about the doll, as if Nana's spirit protected her. And she had been protected. There was too much evidence to deny. Spell or no, that doll always seemed to be watching.
You must read your Nano's words.
Babo went to his room, where Gina heard him rummaging in a drawer. In less than a minute, he reappeared, letter in hand. Gina took the letter and tried to keep her hands steady as she read it.
Dear Captain Santini, my heart is heavy at the news you sent that illness robbed my dear daughter of her life. That you are alive yourself means you were a good husband, and for this I am grateful. See, I refer to the doll you mentioned. The doll was not designed to keep my daughter Antonia healthy or physically safe, as you thought. I did not make the doll for any magical purpose. I only made her to offer comfort to my young Antonia when she tragically lost her mother. The magic happened on the eve of Antonia's wedding to you. I asked our gypsy witch to place a spell on my daughter, that any person who betrayed her would suffer. I asked this because I had learned that my dear departed Rosa, my beloved wife, had been unfaithful to me, and I wished most of all for my daughter to never suffer the pain of betrayal. The gypsy witch made a mistake, though. Antonia was sleeping with her doll that night, something the witch did not notice until after she cast the spell. Worried that the doll absorbed the spell, she recast it and added a caveat that true love would break the spell. Regardless, care should be taken that the doll is not harmed because, from the things you've mentioned, it does seem the doll did absorb the spell. Since your darling Gina has the doll now, you might want to renew the spell for her protection. Although, who knows if this is necessary. But, as it seems to have served you in good stead, it can do no harm, given the dangerous business you're in, where one never knows who is friend or foe. My fondest wish is to see my granddaughter before I die. Kind regards, Enzo Conti.
Tears trickled from Gina's eyes, blurring the last of the words. She remembered the visit to her grandfather, the only time she'd met him. He'd been an old, rather scary man. And, interestingly enough, the doll had grown cold for the first time Gina could remember. The whole experience had been quite eerie. She wiped the tears from her face with the flat of her hand and took a drink to wash the lump down her throat before they could escape again.
On your next visit, Fia, bring her to me before you sail.
The odd request made Gina halt with her glass midway from her mouth. You want the doll? Why? Did he want to keep her? While Gina wasn't convinced of any protective spell, in spite of reading Nano's letter, she didn't want to ruin her good luck by turning loose the doll, just in case.
There is a spell he mentioned in the letter. I have it.
You have it, the spell. Did Nano send it to you?
No. When I took you to meet him one night when you slept, he brought the old gypsy witch to your room. She was old and blind, and I snuck in. I wanted to watch to make sure she did nothing harmful.
Gina pictured her father, always strong and stalwart, watching out for her as she slept.
The spell is simple. I remembered it,
and wrote it down.
And you now want to renew this spell on the doll?
Si.
But, Babo, you're not a witch.
True. But what can it hurt?
The whole idea seemed bizarre. Why is it necessary?
You have no faith in Charles. Perhaps renewing the spell will give you more faith. If he should betray you, he will suffer.
What good will come of his suffering if my ship is blown out of the water?
If that happens, and it is from his betrayal, then you can rest assured he will be punished.
Some comfort that will be to me if I have no ship, she muttered. He heard her and chuckled.
Fia, humor an old man.
Babo, you are not old, she chastised. He nodded his head slowly.
Si, I am. Who knows how much longer I have left on this earth?
Alarmed at the thought, how could she deny him? After all, he would be the one left behind to worry. Shouldn't she do anything she could to ease his mind, no matter how strange, pointless even, it might be?
You are a bad one to play on my fears.
She frowned as she pulled him into a hug. At his satisfied smile, she added, I'll bring her before we sail. Gina spent the rest of the day helping her father unpack his supplies, visiting with him and looking at his gardens, his new hobby. To her surprise, he had a knack for growing things. It only reinforced the thought it would be worth the risk of working with Charles in order to win enough gold for a plantation. Thoughts of Charles reminded her that he'd been gone longer than she expected.
Captain Charles should be back by now, if he's coming.
It could be he wasn't charming enough to persuade my crew. I'll have to bring the rest of the supplies later. There isn't enough time left today. No sooner had she spoken than she noticed a little boat on the water. Her father noticed, too.
No need for you to have worried. He seems to have brought the supplies.
Either that, or he couldn't persuade my crew and had to buy more supplies. Probably what took him so long.
Babo chuckled.
You're a funny one, Fia.
They went to help Charles. Amazingly enough, he not only had gotten the rest of the crates, but had freshly caught fish as well.
Hope you two haven't already eaten.
He'd go to any lengths, would he not? Gina was inclined to deny any hunger. Yet her grumbling stomach reminded her not to let pride stand in the way of filling it with food. She had not eaten all day, and the wine had left her slightly sick and dizzy. Still, since her former attraction for Charles hadn't waned, and she didn't want that attraction to get in the way if they were going to work together, she thought it best she leave. She'd gone with an empty belly before.
"'Tis time for me to go, Babo. I will see you."
"'No, you cannot leave, Fia. It won't take but a moment to cook the fish."
She really didn't want to share another meal with Charles. But Babo looked so forlorn.
"'It's been months since I've seen you,'
he added.
"'Do not be scurrying away so quickly.'
Guilt gnawed at her more than hunger. Her shoulders slumped.
All right, Babo, she conceded,
noting Charles had wisely remained silent as he set about making a fire to roast the fish. She sighed. She'd only have to work with him temporarily. Darkness settled by the time they finished eating. Gina felt calm and replete with food in her belly and more wine warming her veins. Amazing how companionship, food, and drink made the prospect of a risky venture seem so much more promising. It was with some reluctance she announced a second time she needed to leave. Surprisingly, Charles said he needed to go too, and her father, with a twinkle in his eye, didn't object. After a hug goodbye to her, and goodbyes to Charles, her father made a big show of going inside for the night. Charles waited for her at the edge of the house to escort her to her dinghy, leaving her no way to avoid him. Truth be told, she wasn't certain she wanted to avoid him. He placed his hand low, possessively on her back. which caused a satisfied shiver to swim up her spine. She walked on in silence, relishing the closeness with Charles and the pretense that all was well with her world, that she had no pressing choices to make. Once past the dying embers of the campfire, the night grew dim, with only the stars and a sliver of moon to provide a meager light. He stopped at the water's edge.
"Have you decided?"
Gina's contentment started to vanish. When she didn't answer right away, Charles questioned further.
"Did your father not convince you it was a solid plan?"
She pressed her lips together as reality dashed the illusion and desire she'd been nurturing. "I knew that was why you volunteered to get the supplies, so he would work on me."
"Did he?"
She found his presence much too close, and it addled her thinking as she struggled back to reality. "I would have thought they called you Charming Charles for a reason," she snapped once she got her thoughts in order. He gave a puzzled frown.
"I'm not sure."
"You are being an irritating gnat. I do not find that charming at all." She sounded convincing enough, she congratulated herself. He would never realize how physically tempting he was to her, standing so close, touching her.
"Ah, so you want some proper persuading."
He spun her to face him and moved even closer. Not a good idea, she realized. "Oh, no, you don't." She pushed against him, his skin hot and firm beneath his shirt. Her fingers itched to slip past that shirt and explore all the ridges of his muscular chest. Somehow she found the presence of mind to resist. "That's not what I meant."
"Liar, you want me to kiss you again."
He'd moved so her hands were now trapped between them.
"No."
"Yes."
"No,"
she said again. Panicked, she started babbling.
"My head is fuzzy. The wine has hit me hard. I didn't sleep well last night."
His teeth glowed in the moonlight.
"Why is that? Thinking of me?"
Damn her wagging tongue.
"No, it was simply... think, think, think. It was simply too hot to sleep."
Oh no. He would take that. He moved her hands to his shoulders, and her thoughts got lost.
"Did my kiss before bedtime light a fire low in your belly?"
His voice was low and husky. She nearly melted as heat rushed through her body.
"No, that's not..."
She blinked, struggling to remember what she meant to say.
"Stop twisting my words."
The last of the sentence faded away as he moved his fingers along the neckline of her shirt.
"Do you know what to do when you're lying in your bunk in the middle of the night, and you're too hot to sleep?"
She frowned, clueless how to answer. He tugged her shirt out of her breeches.
"You take off your clothes," he whispered. "And then..."
He pulled her shirt up.
"No."
She grabbed his hands to keep him from undressing her.
"No. Well, if you'd rather swim in your clothes..."
"Swim?"
"Of course, swim. Best way to cool off on a hot summer's night,"
he said, all briskness.
"What else did you think I meant?"
She jerked away from him.
"Stop being an ass."
"You think I'm an ass because I prefer to swim naked?"
At his words, he ripped off his own shirt and walked inland to lay it on a large rock.
"What?"
She averted her gaze, then couldn't help peeking over her shoulder at his naked and very muscular chest.
"I'm feeling rather hot myself. I think a cool swim in the ocean is definitely in order."
He worked at the ties on his breeches. She contemplated watching him shuck his pants, but at the last moment turned away.
You enjoy your swim."
Disappointed at the turn of events, she headed for her boat, halfway wishing she had the nerve to join him, knowing that would be a stupid thing. Why would it be stupid? Because it would be stupid. She was just settling in for a long argument with herself, knowing she was going to be full of regrets either way. when she was stopped in her tracks by a tug on her shirt.
"You're sweaty."
"How rude,"
she said through clenched teeth, keeping her back to him, refusing to turn and ogle his naked, tempting body, even though she had every desire to do so.
"Rude, but true, and you know it."
From behind, he tried to tug her shirt over her head, but she held tight.
"Have it your way."
She heard the shrug in his voice, before she could enjoy her hollow triumph. She found herself swung into his arms, and he strolled into the ocean.
"Oh!"
She made the mistake of looking at him, her gaze slipped past his grinning face to his naked chest. Fortunately, she couldn't see any farther down.
As he continued to walk into the ocean, dread fluttered beneath her ribs. "What are you doing?"
The water lapped at her bottom.
"You silly woman, we're going for a swim."
"I'm still dressed."
The protest sounded lame.
"I did try to undress you."
The water was up to his waist, sloshing against her. She felt it soaking through her clothes.
"No, stop!"
Panic beat harder as he was now chest high in the water. She squirmed to get free.
"Put me down."
"All right, if you insist."
He let her go, and she fell down, down into the grasping ocean. Water covered her head, and then her bottom hit the sand. She couldn't breathe, couldn't see. She was going to drown. A thought cut through her rising hysteria. She could stand. The water was only chest high. Her hands flailed in the water. She couldn't figure out how to get to her feet. Then she felt an iron grip on her wrists. The water swooshed away with a sucking sound as she was pulled upward. She lunged at him and grabbed his neck. Water sluiced off her hair into her face. Even as she thought she should punch him, she clung to him instead. She turned her face into his neck, and the water dripped down his back. She breathed deeply, relieved that air, not water, filled her nose.
"What's wrong, love? You're shaking."
He wrapped his arms around her. Her racing heart slowed. Her brain function slowly returned. His question registered.
"I can't," she gasped and shuddered, "swim."
Now that her feet were once again on ground and her head above water, chagrin edged out the unreasonable fear. Even the slosh of the waves against her back no longer felt so threatening. She waited, ready for him to tease her. But to her surprise, he didn't. Instead, he held her secure in his arms until at last she drew a deep breath and relaxed.
"I'm sorry,"
he said softly. His apology startled her into looking at him. She met his gaze, the moon reflected in their dark depths. He really had quite beautiful eyes, cocoa brown, deep, dark, delicious. Then she realized delicious was likely a word she shouldn't think while being held in a naked man's arms. And standing pressed against him, body to body, with only her sodden clothes as a flimsy barrier between them. She had no doubt he'd removed all his clothes. Staring into his eyes, she seemed to have lost her voice. He found his words first.
"I didn't mean to frighten you."
She attempted a laugh, which sounded more like a hoarse cough.
"Silly, isn't it? I sail the seas on a big ship, and I can't swim."
"Many sailors can't swim. I suppose I thought you were so capable you could do anything. I didn't even think to ask."
Pride that he thought she could do anything warred with the embarrassment that she could not. For his sake, she suddenly wished she could swim.
"I used to watch you swimming," she confessed.
He laughed.
"Spying on a bunch of naked sailors?"
She laughed with him, but in truth, her eyes had only been for him.
"I closed my eyes while the lot of you were dressing."
"It's certain you did."
His tone said he didn't believe her.
Did no one teach you to swim?
My mother swam with me when I was younger. Once she died, I forgot all I learned.
And there have been naught but men around you since.
Except at the girls' school, but they all had an aversion to water, thought it was evil.
Ah, yes, polite society, with all their perfumes and powders to cover their stench.
They thought I was the odd one, she admitted, growing up on a ship.
If they could see you now,
she smiled at the thought.
Would you like for me to teach you to swim?
She didn't really want to tell him that the one time she'd tried to swim after she was grown, she'd nearly drowned. And now she couldn't stand to have water on her face. She'd prefer for him to think she was strong and just frightened because she hadn't swum in ages.
Of course you'd need to take off your sodden clothes,
he said with a wicked grin.
They weigh you down too much.
Thank you, but no. I'll be keeping my sodden clothes on my body.
That sounds like a challenge.
Excuse me?
I bet I can get those clothes off you.
Her back stiffened. She pictured her knife in her belt. It might be wet, but that wouldn't stop the blade from being sharp. Not unless you want to lose a hand, or at least a few fingers.
Nay, I won't have to wrestle them off you.
What? You think you'll just ask and I'll take them off?
His eyes simmered a challenge. Something like that,
I think you had too much wine at supper.
Aye, perhaps I did. I'm feeling a bit reckless.
So, how do you... She stopped her question. The answer was obvious as he took her face between her palms and lowered his head for a kiss. His lips touched hers, and she shivered in fear again. A different fear, not one of dying, but one of losing control. Never the kind of situation a pirate captain wanted. But she seemed helpless to stop herself. Or him. His assault was gentle, and at first his lips were light on hers. She felt herself relaxing, being sucked in, and as she became more pliant in his arms, he became bolder with his kiss. Somehow her mouth was open, allowing him to plunder its warm depths, over and over, until he teased her tongue into his mouth to explore him as well. Desire blossomed in her belly, heated her body in spite of the cool water lapping at her clothes. Her fingers wrapped in his long hair, the tips wet with the waves. She urged him on, while her mind screamed a warning. It's a trap, it's a trap. Who cares? Her body answered. With a last, dizzying, warning thought that this might be a mistake, she broke away. He took advantage of the space between them to tug her shirt up and over her head. Vaguely, she registered that he dropped it in the water and it was floating toward the shore. She couldn't form a protest, not even when he put a hand on her breast and pulled her even closer with his other arm before kissing her again. Body to body, she couldn't miss the evidence of his desire wedged firmly against her lower belly, the tip of his erection burning against the skin recently bared. Moments later, he freed her lips again and she sucked in much-needed air. But his lips moving lower down her neck, and lower, kept her dizzy. He pulled a moan from her when his mouth latched onto her breast. And when his hand moved to work the tie on her breeches, she realized he most certainly would unclothe her without losing his hand or a single finger. He pushed his breeches down over her hips, and his fingers probed the tender folds burning with need. "Not fair," she gasped, pushing against his hand, loving the sensation of his delving fingers.
"I never play fair."
His fingers slid inside. She arched against him,
Not when it's something I want, he added.
And you want me?
She felt a thrill of power. Years overdue, but triumph. At last.
Aye.
He lifted her in his arms and carried her toward the shore.
I do.
Chapter 4 Water lapped at Gina's toes, pulling her reluctantly from a dreamless sleep. Sand scratched her back. Sand? Her eyes snapped open and she was greeted by darkness. Awareness flooded back. She jerked her head to the left, and there was Charles, sleeping, naked. She glanced down. She was naked, too, lying on the sand, exposed to anyone who might come to the beach. She gave a cautious look around. The area seemed deserted, thank goodness. And thank goodness the night was still dark with naught but a dim glow from the new moon and a few twinkling stars. He'd gotten her clothes off, and she hadn't protested, not once. See, he was a slick one, truly. Memories rushed back. His kisses, his body on hers. His lovemaking had been so much more than she'd imagined. She could never have believed such a fire as he lit in her body. Peace and contentment warmed her. She sighed, stretched, and smiled. The water now lapped at her ankles. The tide was coming in, and they would soon be very wet. They'd only made it just to the water's edge before falling to the beach, consumed with each other. She touched his shoulder. Wake up. He came awake and leaned to kiss her. She held him off. Stop that. We need to move, or we'll be floating in the ocean. You know I won't like that. With a smile, he pushed up to his elbows and stared at the advancing tide. She looked around, saw her knife hilt sticking up from where he'd pulled it from her belt and launched it into the sand.
Where are my clothes?
One boot there. Another. A clump of something beyond that could be her breeches. Oh, but her shirt. He'd tossed it off in the waves. Hopefully it had washed ashore, farther down the beach.
We still have time,
he said and kissed her again. She twisted away.
We're lying naked where anyone can see us, you know.
How could she have lost her head so easily? A blush heated her.
Go find my clothes,
she growled, darting another furtive glance around her to make sure they were still alone.
Never fear, m'lady,
he said gallantly. Perhaps understanding embarrassment made her sound like a fishwife.
I will recover your garments.
With a quick kiss to her cheek, he pushed to his feet and walked off, not appearing the least bit concerned he was naked. Of course, men did tend to shuck their clothes to go swimming without a second's thought.
Here you go. You can wear this.
He returned almost immediately with his dry shirt he'd left on the rocks. He helped her to her feet, and she slipped on the shirt, aware of his gaze on her. Who knew a man watching her dress would renew her desire?
Thank you.
At least the shirt covered important parts, even though her bare legs showed.
You're welcome, love.
He took her hands and pulled her close.
What is that smile on your face?
She pinched her lips together, unaware she'd been smiling. He didn't seem to need an answer.
Bet you won't forget me this time.
She gasped and smacked his shoulder.
Conceited oaf.
He smiled, then kissed her. She felt him grow hard. And made herself break away.
Wait, you're supposed to find my clothes, remember?
Sighing, he said,
Bossy wench.
As he left, she added,
And get your breeches on, sailor.
He turned around and, walking backward, saluted her.
Aye, captain.
Her gaze dropped and she saw he was also saluting her elsewhere. She spun away in a sudden attack of modesty and heard his laughter.
Awkwardness held her rooted to the spot until she realized she couldn't stay here like a useless piece of driftwood. Since she was halfway covered, she might as well retrieve her things close at hand. She grabbed the boot closest to her, as well as her knife. Her other boot lay a few feet beyond. She had made it to the rocks when he appeared.
"Here's your breeches."
He handed her the wet, dripping garment caked with sand.
"Awful," she groaned. "I'll need to rinse them."
Even then, they would be stiff with salt water. He dug in his pocket.
"Here's my flint box. You can start a fire to help dry them."
"Thank you," she said, catching the small metal box he tossed to her.
"Your shirt probably washed up farther ashore. I'll go look."
"If you don't find it, I'm keeping yours."
She smiled and laid her items on the rock in front of a small cave. She took her breeches back into the ocean to rinse them. They were heavy and hard to wring out, and the water dripping from them splashed onto her legs as she walked back to the cave. In the little rocky cove in front of the cave, she gathered driftwood and got the fire going just as Charles came back, triumphant with her shirt as his prize catch. Having already washed the sand out, he spread the shirt on the rocks by her pants, then turned to her.
"Now, where were we?"
He pulled her into his arms. Her heart fluttered, alarmed at how quickly she'd fallen under his spell. No matter her long-ago infatuation with him, she spun away.
"You should know,"
she said to his questioning look, standing at a distance where she could think and not be distracted by his touches.
"You've wasted your effort. I was already going to agree to your proposal."
He raised his eyebrows, then said,
"Egads, I've wasted my effort. No need to waste more time, then."
He turned to walk away.
"What?"
His action startled a gasp from her. He'd actually used physical intimacies to bribe her? Mortification burned through her. She ran after him and launched herself at his back. He easily sidestepped her attack with some sort of sixth sense. Twisting away, he caught her in his arms.
"Violent wench, aren't you?"
He twirled her in a circle, and she realized he was laughing.
"Stop, you oaf!"
She pounded at his back. He obeyed, and her head spun crazily. He waited until she could focus on him before he said,
"I assure you, love, my effort was not wasted."
In the small cave, Gina lay curled up against him, her body warm, if albeit slightly scratched from the sand. He held her in his arms in the early light before sunrise, content to simply watch her breathe. She thought he'd seduce her to persuade her to agree to his proposal. Nay, he'd been dreaming of this for years. Fantasies, spurred by memories of their kiss, had buoyed him through his years of imprisonment. After finding her in his bed that night, and succumbing to that impulsive kiss, sending her away had been the hardest thing he'd ever done. He always knew he'd look for her one day. And then fate handed him the perfect opportunity. The rhythm of her breathing changed. She was awake. Her eyes slowly opened, and then she moved so her gaze could meet his. She blinked, gasped.
"Good morning, love,"
he said in a soothing tone.
"It's almost sunrise," she said with amazement filling her face. "We slept all night?"
"One of us did."
She pushed up on her elbow and stared at him.
"You didn't sleep?"
"I slept."
She pierced him with a knowing look, nothing slow about her.
"Just not all night."
She tilted her head.
"Why?"
"I was staring at you."
If she'd dropped her gaze, he'd have been disappointed. She didn't disappoint.
"If you're thinking about running again, I'll chase you this time and run you through."
Her boldness startled a laugh out of him.
"I don't recall that I ran."
"You ran as fast as you could push me out of your bunk."
"You know I had to."
He soothed a stray strand of dark hair from her face.
I almost didn't. That kiss nearly made me lose my mind.
What good did it do, my going off to school? She clarified.
You learned to pull tea?
How much tea do you drink?
I am English. I enjoy a nice cup of tea now and then. Laced with a little bourbon never hurts.
He hoped his smile helped ease the regrets. Too bad I've forgotten how to pour tea, and school didn't teach me a single useful thing about captaining a ship. I should have stayed with you.
What if you'd stayed, and we were together when I was shanghaied? What if you'd been pregnant?
Her face reddened, but she didn't drop her gaze. I would have still sailed, as I am now. I was raised on a ship. Besides, if you'd been with me, you wouldn't have been at that tavern where you got hauled off.
Of that I'm sure. I would have been with you. But I thought I was doing best, and it was what your father wanted.
No one makes decisions for me now.
You are correct, they do not. You have a very level head on your shoulders.
He touched her shoulders, trailed his finger down her arms.
And lovely arms attached to the shoulders.
Then his hand trickled to her breast, and he felt her shudder.
And these beauties are attached below.
She snatched his wrist, her grip firm and sure. Hold there, Captain. Don't change the subject. He raised his gaze to hers.
What?
What happened?
When I was shanghaied. Same thing that happens so often. I was drinking too much in a small seaside tavern, trying to convince myself sending you away was for the best.
She gave him a skeptical look, but he was so very serious.
The next thing I knew, he continued, I woke up with the mother of all hangovers, bound and gagged in the belly of a Spanish ship.
Spanish? Is revenge then part of your motivation for going after the Spanish galleon?
I cannot pass up such an opportunity for gold. And if it hurts the Spanish as well, that is but a bonus.
One Spaniard in particular, he thought. This scar, did they give you that? Her fingers, at once both strong and gentle, traced the scar on his face. Memories of the desperate battle to get away. The sword slicing his cheek before he parried and stabbed the tormentor, who had been a demon in charge of the prisoners on the ship headed to the island of hell, made the blood pulse through his body. Bad memories. Angry memories.
I got it when I attempted to escape the men who shanghaied me.
He admitted, surprised he was able to keep his voice level. And these on your back? Her hand went behind him. Babo rarely whipped anyone, and I am sure he never whipped you. Her touch was light on the scars.
He still owed for those as well.
Captain Gomez had used him as an example.
Aye, your father was a good and just captain. He rarely whipped a man.
Did you lead a mutiny? How much should he tell her? If she knew how the thought of vengeance had pushed him through the dark days, how it still drove him, would she want to risk her ship?
I tried, but that failed.
And Captain Gomez's debt was not yet settled.
I eventually managed to escape and steal a ship and find a crew.
That didn't tell the whole story, but there was no need to share the details. You've been sailing and pirating since.
Aye, living the life of a pirate these years hence,
not wanting to be forced to lie should she continue with her probing questions. He changed the direction of her thoughts.
We're wasting time talking, don't you think?
He leaned down to kiss her, and this time she didn't object. Chapter 5.
Good day, Captain,
Mickey said when she boarded the Gypsy Doll.
How is your father?
Mickey discreetly avoided mentioning her disheveled, salt-encrusted state, she noticed.
He is doing well, but lonely.
She hoped after this trip that would change.
It is such a shame he has no one to keep him company. Charles said you were talking to your father about that grand scheme. Does your father think it will work?
Babbo is optimistic, see.
Oh, that would be wonderful for certain. If we take enough, you can quit sailing and stay with your father.
She wondered what gave Mickey the idea she would be quitting sailing. She had not discussed the possibility with him. Had he become a mind reader then?
So anxious you are to be rid of me.
Oy, he blustered. Captain Charles and I were talking when he came to get the supplies.
So it was as she thought. Charles talked up Mickey, appealed to his greed, as he would likely be the next captain if she were to quit sailing, and then waltzed off with the crates for her father. She smiled. He did earn his reputation. But it pricked her a little that Mickey appeared so anxious for her to retire. She'd grown up with him and considered him as much of a friend as anyone could have in this cutthroat business.
You think it's time for me to lower the sails?
Getting too old to pirate, am I? She joked. She was at least 15 years younger than Mickey. He laughed.
Captain, you're a young whippersnapper and you know it. And you be a good captain. I just thought you'd want to be with your father in his last years, rather than out roaming the seas.
His words should have pacified her. He seemed sincere enough. Yet a creeping feeling crawled up her spine. Of course, every captain was paranoid. Just as Charles stole his ship, many a ship had been taken over by an ambitious sailor. The gypsy doll had been lucky. Maybe that doll had prevented any mutiny attempts. Or maybe she and Babbo had been good captains, and the crew was content. She'd prefer to think that.
I was a bit surprised Charles was able to get the rest of Babbo's supplies.
Still feeling prickly, she put forth the subtle criticism.
He was struggling all right, until I came along. Pete and Will had him at sword point.
At least some of her men were doing their job.
And you called them off?
Aye, when he told me you were there with your father. Afterward, we talked about the plans.
Had Mickey concluded on his own that she would want to quit sailing? Or was it an idea planted by Charles?
I'm glad you approve. Much needs to be done if we're to be off in time for our appointamento with that Spanish galleon.
She went through a list of instructions and added,
Pull the men off shore leave, see if we lose any. We might need to secure more crew.
When they find out what we're going after, they'll be lining up to go,
he predicted.
It's possible, she agreed, then went to change out of her salty clothes before leaving the gypsy doll to secure more ammunition and cannon.
She planned to be as prepared as possible when facing a heavily armed ship. After a day spent negotiating for supplies, Gina was parched and stopped by the Boar's Head for a pint. As she was drinking, the back of her neck prickled, reminding her of the time when a beetle crawled on her in the middle of the night and made her bolt out of a dreamless sleep. Turning from the bar, her hand casually on the hilt of her sword, she looked for the source. She found the man over in the corner, his dark eyes narrowed into slits as he stared at her. He looked familiar, and when he saw she'd spotted him, he raised his pint. Gina remembered. He was one of the men Charles had been talking to on their first night in port. A supplier, Charles had said. If that were true, why was he here in the middle of the afternoon and not at his shop? Unless he was taking a break. And yet, she'd been to many shops today and had not seen him. Perhaps then he was more of a nefarious kind of supplier. Anything could be had for a price on this island, in spite of Governor Rogers' efforts. What was it Charles wanted that he couldn't get in a shop? As if her thoughts conjured him, Charles walked into the Boar's Head. He seemed to have a purpose in mind and hardly spared a glance toward the bar. He didn't notice her, and she wasn't surprised to see him head straight for the table with the man who'd been watching her. Charles sat down and pulled out a roll of parchment. Before he could unroll it, the man nodded toward her, and Charles twisted around to face the bar. Their gazes locked. For an endless moment they stared, and she wished she could read his thoughts. Was he guilty? Dismayed to see her? Happy? His face revealed nothing. But then he said something to the man. Sticking the parchment back into his jacket, he headed for her with a smile on his face. Was it genuine? Why was she having doubts? Doubts or not, her heart leaped as he moved closer, and the memories of last night rushed back.
"Hello, Captain,"
he said, surprising her with a kiss to her cheek. "Captain," she acknowledged.
"I've seen glimpses of your coattails in and out of the shops today."
"See, I've had much shopping to do, and you?"
She nodded her head toward the man at the table.
"Still consulting with your supplier. Is there a problem?"
"No problem. Why do you ask?"
"You have a list this time. Do you think he can read?"
"A list?"
She nodded toward his jacket.
"Oh, yes, well."
"And you have had no goods delivered to your ship. That would indicate there is a problem."
"Spying on me?"
In truth, she had set a man to watch his ship.
"I find it valuable to keep watch on my business partners."
"Why don't you come watch first hand tonight? Visit my cabin."
She drained her pint.
"Captain, what type of woman do you think I am?"
"You had no qualms once."
"How ungentlemanly of you to remind me. Besides, I learned my lesson."
"And I learned mine."
He leaned close.
"Want to share my bunk?"
Unable to resist touching him, she wrapped her arms around his neck and nibbled his ear.
"You'll just have to wait to find out," she said in a husky voice.
She kissed his cheek, winked, and turned to leave. Unaware they had an audience with the men at the bar, she was surprised by the whistles and catcalls. She shook her head, knowing she had enhanced Captain Charles's reputation. It was dusk a few days later before Gina got into the dinghy to row back to the ship from her father's home. With her ship supplied, armed, and ready to sail, there had been only one thing left to do. The doll lay on the bench across from her, looking peacefully up at the first evening star, as if the ceremony performed on her hadn't affected her at all.
"Get hold of yourself, Gina. The doll isn't real."
Of course the ceremony hadn't affected her. Although for the space of a few seconds, when Gina and her father muttered the Romani words, which translated into something close to, "Any who may betray you will suffer, but true love can break the spell." It seemed as if the doll's eyes had looked almost alive. That was the only way Gina could describe what she'd seen. The doll's eyes, nothing more than carved and painted orbs of bone, had glowed warm and alive. It startled Gina so much she stumbled over the words she was reciting. She pulled herself back on course, and when next she braved a glance, the doll once again looked like a doll. Gina dismissed what she saw as an illusion, a trick of the candlelight. Ridiculo to think even for a moment the doll might draw a breath like a real person. Still, rowing back to the bigger island, the slosh, slosh, slosh of the waves against the boat, normally soothing, failed to keep her from recalling that strange incident. She couldn't help but wonder about the grandmother who had been killed. Babbo had known her grandmother when he was a little boy. Nana Rosa had been a vibrant, flamboyant woman, he told her. It had been rumored she'd been killed by a lover. And with her murder, Nano Enzo pulled in on himself and kept a very tight grip on his daughter. If Babbo had not been such a good, hard-working man, he'd never have gotten close to her mother. Gina had not been able to believe in the power of the doll, because it hadn't kept her mother alive or prevented her father from getting sick. But once she read the letter and heard the ancient words, she understood. The true love caveat at the end had apparently been added so if the doll's owner had done harm to the doll, the bad luck she created could be countered by true love. Strange things existed in the world of the gypsies. There was no denying the doll seemed to have some weird, spooky presence. Some power? Maybe. I suppose you've been useful enough, my dear Rosa, at least according to Babo and Mickey. Rosa smiled. The doll smiled? Gina blinked and looked again. No, no smile. A trick of the moonlight. Still, a shudder slid over Gina's body, and it was with a sigh of relief she reached the pier. Darkness blanketed the port as she secured the dinghy's rope to the pier. With a slight hesitation, she picked up Rosa, then tucked the doll under her arm. Carrying the thing was embarrassing, but she only had to walk down the pier to the gypsy doll. She'd managed earlier without anyone paying attention, and no one appeared to be in sight. But as she approached the gangplank, two men bounded onto the pier from the beach below and grabbed her. One had his hand over her mouth before she could yell, and each had an iron-clad grip on her while they dragged her down from the pier to the sandy beach. Taken by surprise, her heart thudded. She struggled to breathe through the dirty hand clutching her face. Time slowed. The night took on an unreal aspect, and her vision narrowed until she could only see a portion of her ship in front of her. She heard a harsh gasping, so loud it almost drowned out the sound of the sea sloshing against the pier. Her own breath? She twisted, trying to break their hold, but the men held tight.
"Look here, she's got her dolly,"
the man on the right said. Wide-eyed, she jerked to look at him. She didn't know him. Panic fired her brain. What did they want? Why her? She was dressed like a man, not a harlot.
"Little too old to play with dolls, aren't you, Captain?"
the other one said. She met his gaze and stiffened. Him, she knew. He was the man who had been meeting with Charles. Suddenly the attack made more sense. She wrenched her head, attempting to break free. When that didn't work, she tried to speak. Her voice came out muffled against the hand clamped over her mouth. What did they want?
"Aye, Captain, you recognize me, don't ye?"
She kept struggling with a niggling certainty that whatever they wanted, it was not going to be good for her. Just then, a man appeared at the railing of the gypsy doll. With barely a look around, he relieved himself over the side of the ship. Gina hardly gave it a thought, sailing with men as she did. Her sensibilities were long past shockable. But for some reason, it must have affected the one with his hand over her mouth. He loosened his grip. It was only a slight easing in pressure, but enough that she could move her mouth, and she clamped her teeth onto his hand.
"Ouch!"
He jerked his hand away.
"Sailor!"
she yelled.
"Get my first mate!"
The pirate glanced down.
"Captain?"
"Bring help!"
She struggled anew when the sailor dashed off, yelling to raise the alarm. Soon more footsteps were pounding on the deck.
"I'm not facing her crew,"
the man on the right said.
"Just a warning, Lady Captain,"
said the one she'd seen with Charles.
"You don't want to go where he be taking you."
His innocuous words made her blurt.
"What do you mean?"
"You can stay and chat, mate. I'm leaving."
The man on her right released her and dashed away.
"You don't know what you're getting into with those Spaniards,"
the one who'd been speaking to her warned before following his friend. Seconds later, Mickey led a group of her men down the gangplank.
"Go, go,"
he directed them after the two men who had run off among the tangle of supplies and ships along the wharf. The hiding places were many, and the likelihood of her men catching those two were slim.
"Captain, are you all right? Did they hurt you?"
"I'm not hurt,"
Shaken? Mad? Yes.
Did they try to rob you?
Then his eyes lit on the doll.
She saved you.
Gina shifted the doll into the crook of her arm.
I don't think they were intent on harm in the first place. They wanted to give me a warning.
Warn ye?
Against this undertaking.
But you don't know if that's all they intended. 'Tis lucky you are that doll was with you.
Gina didn't like the powers he was attributing to the doll, even if she had just returned from renewing a spell on the thing. She felt her ire rising over the whole evening.
'Tis lucky I am, she returned, slightly mocking his language. That Georgie had to take a piss.
Aye, and without that doll, he might not have had to.
Mickey averted his gaze.
Relieve himself.
Despite her anger, she smiled at his embarrassment. But then she thought of the warning. And Charles.
What is he getting me into that I should be warned by strangers? She muttered.
He'll be here later,
Mickey said, referring to the fact that Charles was spending the night in her cabin now.
You can ask him then.
Gina was too upset to be embarrassed that her love life was so public. No matter, she tried to keep it discreet. She thrust the doll at Mickey.
Take her to my cabin.
Mickey cradled the doll as carefully as if she were a newborn.
Captain?
I'm not waiting on Charles. I'm going to find him.
But, Captain, those men are still out there.
See, and I'm alert to them. They won't sneak up on me again.
At least wait until...
Nay, I don't want anyone to go with me. If I have to murder Charles, I want no witnesses.
She left Mickey chuckling, but she wasn't so certain she was jesting. Stomping toward Charles the Charmer's ship, her hand resting on her sword hilt, she itched for someone to attack her again, so she could work out some of her anger. That two men would attack just to warn her seemed illogical. Of course, that might not have been the only reason. Her men had cut the attack short. They might have had other plans and only gave the warning to throw her off. But were those two men smart enough to think of such a quick excuse? Or had they attacked her to get back at Charles for some reason? Her thoughts were swirling. The fishy odors of the wharf and the lap of water against the sides of the docked ship barely sank into her consciousness as she focused on finding Charles. He wasn't on his ship. Her confrontation would have to wait. A disappointment. All worked up and no one's head to chop. After thanking the first mate, she started back to her ship at a slower pace. Her men, unsuccessful in their search for the other two, fell in behind her. Mickey was right, she appeased herself. Charles would come to her later. Later found her pacing the deck, her ire still burning brightly as Charles sauntered jauntily up the gangplank. When he saw her, he stopped and tilted his head. A smile spread on his face.
Hello, love. Waiting up for me?
He stepped onto the deck.
Indeed I am, she said coldly.
He could miss neither her tone nor the frown chiseled on her face.
What is it?
He closed the distance fast and took hold of her arms. She jerked away. His eyebrows went up.
Friends of yours were waiting for me when I returned from Babo's.
Friends?
He frowned.
Were you hurt?
That's an odd question. Why would you think that?
He ignored her question.
I have no friends, you know that. In this business, friends are not dependable.
He pivoted and paced away, then stopped to turn and stare at her again.
Were you hurt?
He repeated, his tone like thunder.
No, I was taken unaware, but my men rallied to my defense.
Thank the gods for that.
His relief did not melt her anger.
They did have time to leave me a message before they ran off.
One warns me not to trust you.
Who was this?
He asked sharply.
Did you recognize them?
One of them,
You were buying supplies from him, so you said. Frowning, he shook his head.
I'm not surprised.
What does that mean? What sort of supplies are you buying that he was led to warn me? Charles gave a half shrug.
He was not happy with our terms.
You didn't answer my question. None of my suppliers feel the need to threaten you.
I'm buying information, love. But I did not trust what he told me and refused to pay his outrageous fee.
So his warning was retaliation?
Good guess, yes. But I will find out for certain. This means, though, that our friendship can be a liability.
He said absent-mindedly as he paced the deck. A... The word stuck in her throat. She was conflicted as to which was worse, his implication she was merely a friend, or the idea their relationship was a liability. A... She cleared her throat. A friend? I'm not but a friend? He snapped around to face her.
What? Oh, I was simply muttering. Of course you are much more than a friend, love.
She did not feel appeased. But still a liability.
Liability? You? Never. If I'd have thought so, I would never have asked you to help.
You said?
Simply a generalization. The attack was an unforeseen occurrence. I was merely talking aloud to myself as I realized.
He went to her and stopped, staring into her eyes as if stripping her soul. You realized? She prompted.
I realized.
He took hold of her arms, his fingers wrapped firmly, possessively, over her flesh.
Just how much you mean to me.
He pulled her into his embrace.
Those men will pay.
His body felt warm, comforting, secure. No harm was done. Except for the doubts they had placed in her mind, which were, at the feel of his arms around her, washing away as water off the deck, building desire edged out the last of the doubt. Especially when his lips touched hers, after sharing a kiss all too brief yet potent. He asked,
Shall we move to your cabin?
See, she said, pushing any remaining worries out of her head, for now. Later, she'd take them back out and examine them. But now, she led him to her cabin. Charles spooned against Gina's back and deepened his breathing, pretending to fall asleep. As he lay watching, waiting, her scent warmed his senses. Tempted as he was to relive the last hour, he resisted, not wanting to stoke his desire again. He had something more important to attend. At last she drifted into a deep sleep, and he slipped out of bed. He pulled on his breeches, but the heat made him choose to leave off his shirt. Besides, he didn't want Gina to awaken just yet. The less noise, the better. He tiptoed into the adjoining office. As quietly as he could, he pulled a piece of paper from his pants pocket. Sitting in the desk chair, in plain view of the bed, he carefully unfolded the parchment and spread it atop her star charts. The paper, purchased just this evening, had coordinates he'd not been able to verify with his charts, since as soon as he returned to his ship, he learned about the attack on Gina. He'd rushed to her without taking time to plot the coordinates. Now he checked the information with her charts and drew a rough sketch on the paper. His heartbeat increased. Aye, he'd searched long for this information. Now, if the Spanish attack went well, he'd have the resources he needed to get back to the island and wreak the last of his vengeance, while also serving his country. He needed a place to keep the information safe. With their upcoming venture, he could and would memorize the coordinates. But in mounting this attack, plus the distraction of Gina, he didn't want to trust solely on his memory. He'd worked too long for this information. He leaned back, took a deep breath, and his eyes lit on the doll. Earlier, they'd tossed her from the bed onto a chest at the foot of the bed, visible through the doorway. He tiptoed back into the room and picked her up, surprised to find her oddly warm for something made of bone. She watched him with glowing eyes that made her seem almost alive. Even more startling, he felt an energy flowing through her that made his fingers tingle. The sensation nearly made him drop her. No, his imagination had to have gotten the best of him. Gathering his wits, he hurried to the desk, sat back in the chair, and lifted the doll's skirt. She had on a pair of ruffled pantalettes. That seemed the best place to hide the paper. He folded it and stuck it down the pantalettes. But when he held the doll up, the paper slid down. The pantalettes were loose around her ankles, and it was possible the map could slide out and get lost. That would not do at all. He studied the doll. No reason he couldn't directly transcribe the map onto the doll. He glanced through the open door to the bed. Gina was still soundly sleeping. He didn't want to have to explain why he was riding on her doll. Her trust in him was tenuous at best. Quickly, he stripped the doll. On the front of her chest was a carving of a rose. Perhaps that's why Gina called her Rosa. He turned her over and found her back smooth. Perfect. He dipped Gina's desk pen into the inkwell and jotted the coordinates on her bottom, then drew a rough map on her back with the details needed to prompt his memory. Feeling the pressure of time passing, he blew on the ink.
"Dry, ink, dry," he whispered.
He had no idea if the ink would smear if he tossed sand on the doll, so instead he blew. After several minutes of puffing on her backside, he risked the sand. With the ink dry, he slid the clothes back onto the bony form.
"What are you doing with my doll?"
"Finished not a minute too soon." He raised his gaze to Gina.
"Mickey credits the doll with saving you tonight."
Never directly answer a question when looking to redirect.
"See, the silly man truly believes in Rosa's magic powers."
"And you don't?"
"She's a doll, made of bone, with some words muttered over her."
"But holding her, it's rather creepy. She almost feels alive. And it seems her eyes are watching me, don't you think?"
Gina shrugged.
"Sometimes she seems to have something."
She pushed her hair away from her face, exposing her breasts from beneath the covers.
"Could you not sleep?"
"There are too many thoughts running through my mind. Those men attacking you, I want to find them and punish them, but we set sail in 2 days.
Even as he spoke, his brain paid attention to the picture of her before him.
"It was not your fault, and getting underway is more important than seeking retribution."
Seeking retribution was one of those things that drove him. If only she knew. But no sense in telling her until the time was right, if ever. His experience with being shanghaied led him to believe it was best not to plan too far in advance.
"They attacked my woman."
He moved to her bunk.
"That deserves justice."
"I can take care of myself, you know."
"Aye, you can. But let me feel manly and take care of you."
She raised her eyebrows.
"That's a very good idea. Be manly and take care of me. Now."
She held out her arms to him. With a smile, he climbed back onto the bunk.
"Aye, aye, Captain."
Chapter 6 2 days later, before the crack of first light, Gina had her men scurrying about the gypsy doll in a well-orchestrated sort of chaos, preparing to make way. Nerves energized her, and she worked as hard as any of her men. Normally, she loved setting sail on a new voyage. It always felt like a new beginning, an adventure, looking for that pot of gold. And this time, if luck held, there should be a big pot at the end of this rainbow. The prospect of a battle loomed large to temper her excitement, though. The gypsy doll, as big, as well-armed as she was, rarely had to go to battle when they went after smaller merchant ships. Occasionally, one might make a valiant attempt at defense, but a few well-placed cannon shots generally made a captain reconsider. This time, though, a battle was practically guaranteed. Tension hummed in the air. Every crewman knew what they'd be up against. Gina checked and rechecked the cannonballs, powder, tinder boxes. She made sure the powder and tinder were covered and watertight in case of stormy seas. Wet powder or damp tinder to light it would do no good in a battle.
"Crewman," she called to a tall, bow-legged man passing.
She didn't recognize him. He must be a new one Mickey had signed for the voyage.
"Hi, Captain."
"Help me tighten those ropes over the cannonballs. It's too loose, and I don't want them rolling around if we hit rough seas."
"Aye, Captain."
The two worked together. One reason Gina knew she had such a loyal crew was that, like her father before her, she was willing to work alongside every crewman, no matter how lowly or menial the job. Gina knew that in truth, no job was lowly or menial. Every task important to make for as smooth and accident-free a voyage as possible.
"We're ready to get underway," Mickey reported.
"Make way, then, first mate."
"Unfurl the main mast,"
Mickey shouted. Two crewmen scrambled up the mast to release the sheets and let the mainsail down.
"The breeze is good, Captain."
"Crewman,"
Gina called up to the man closest to her.
"Do you see the Ladonna?"
"Aye, Captain. They are slow as a sea snail. We'll beat them out of port."
Gina felt a sense of satisfaction, bringing to mind the time Charles had insulted the speed of her ship. He'd be sailing in her wake today. She smiled and climbed the mast herself to the crow's nest. She wanted to wave at him as they sailed out of the harbor. But as they drew closer to his ship, she saw no sign of imminent departure. She frowned, put the telescope to her eye. A few men were moving around the deck of the ship, but nothing with the speed of making ready to sail. Charles had left her cabin in the early hours of the morning. Why wasn't he on deck giving orders, making ready? A feeling of dread ran down her spine. Was she being set up?
"Captain, there's a ruckus at 10 o'clock.
The man in the other crow's nest shouted. She swung her scope that direction. Indeed, there was a scuffle. Two men were brawling while a handful of other men watched. A couple staggered in the street with bottles in their hands, as if it was the end of a long night of drinking. She focused on the fighting men. Actually, it was not much of a fight as one man dominated. That man looked like Charles. She looked at the other man. It was one of the men who'd attacked her. A moment later, the man stumbled over a pile of rubbish on the ground and fell. No, not a pile of rubbish. Another man. She couldn't see his face, but it was a good bet it was his partner, the one she hadn't recognized. Obviously, Charles had left her bed this morning to hunt those men down. She supposed he thought his smaller, faster ship could catch up with her, and he'd have time to exact a little retribution. Part of her felt irritated. Had she wanted retribution against those men, she could have hunted them down herself. The other part, however, felt a little thrill that he was protective of her enough to seek justice. She put the scope away and climbed down to the deck, and as they sailed into open waters, she felt confident this trip was going to prove profitable.
"A warning to any of you who might think in the future to bother my lady captain. 'Twould be a very bad idea."
Charles left the two downed men in the small crowd that had gathered and made his way back to his ship.
"Captain, the gypsy doll left port a half hour hence."
"We'll catch up to her, no worries. Make ready to sail."
"Aye, Captain."
The first mate eyed Charles's knuckles.
"Looks like you found the culprits."
Charles flexed his hands.
"Aye, the hands will need a bit of doctoring. Get us underway."
"Aye, Captain."
Inside his cabin, Charles uncorked his jug of whiskey, took a swig, then poured some over his raw, bleeding knuckles. Holy Mother, that hurt. The reward was knowing those two men regretted trying to scare Gina and planting doubt by suggesting there was more to know than he was telling. No need for her to know if it didn't come to fruition. He corked the jug and headed back up on deck. It also served to give any on the docks a warning that he protected his own. An hour later, the helmsman guided the ship out of dock. When they reached the open water, Charles called,
"Full sails! Let's give the lady pirate a run!"
His men cheered. Charles smiled. It was going to be a good day. Gina didn't know when Charles left port, but by dusk that evening her lookout caught his sails on the horizon. He would catch up with them before morning. She breathed a sigh of relief. There had been the slightest niggle of doubt that he'd been planning to send her to a trap. As much as she tried to put the thought aside, it was hard to ignore the warning from those men. When morning came, she awoke to find he'd caught up and slowed the LaDonna's speed enough to sail alongside the Gypsy Doll. His men and hers ribbed each other with good-natured insults throughout the day. She refrained from joining in their fun, but kept her eye on the captain, hungrily taking in the sight of him. They sailed in smooth water for days, and at night Gina tossed in her bunk, wondering how she'd gotten so used to him sleeping beside her in such a short amount of time. What would happen when this was over? They'd never talked beyond planning for this venture. And if this was a success, she'd likely quit sailing for good to be with her father. Would Charles keep on pirating? She didn't know. They'd been out of harbor so many days that doldrums had set in. Long days of staring at nothing but water. At this point in a voyage, Gina worked hard to keep the men busy with ship maintenance. On the ocean, the situation could, and did, change in an instant. And a pirate who didn't get lazy was a pirate more likely to stay alive. Tonight, loneliness tagged her more than usual, and every trick she knew, even holding her doll, didn't help. Sleep remained elusive. When morning came, she stumbled out of her cabin feeling straggly and tired, only to be greeted with ominous news.
"Captain, storm on the horizon,"
the man in the crow's nest called. Her gaze shifted to the front of the ship. True enough, black clouds were forming in the distance.
"Keep a watch on it, mate. Maybe it will take a different course." By late afternoon, it was obvious they were catching the storm.
Charles's men signaled they were going to try to sail around. Gina calculated. The storm stretched on in front of them, looming closer. It might be possible to sail around, but how far off course would they be? The LaDonna was a small sloop. She could make better time sailing off course. But as a heavier frigate, the Gypsy Doll would have a harder time going around and then making up lost time. And as a larger ship, the Gypsy Doll would be more able to withstand a gale. Still, it wouldn't hurt to try to make it to the edge of the storm at least. Maybe it would be less intense on the fringes.
"Give the order to turn her to port, Mickey. Heave to and follow the LaDonna."
"Aye, Captain."
He gave the orders to the helmsman. For 2 hours they sailed on a parallel course with the storm, until the winds picked up and the sails flapped dangerously. The sky grew dark. Lightning flashed, thunder rolled. It was clear they were not going to outrun the squall. Gina had lost sight of the LaDonna a half hour earlier.
"Batten the hatches, reef the mainsails, turn her about. We'll head into the storm."
If they sailed into the storm with the mainsails furled, they would be a smaller target. But the jib sails she left hoisted would still give her some control. The men, and Gina too, pulled on their rain slickers, and they all scurried about, double-checking that supplies were secure, tying down the sails. Thunder rattled the deck while lightning slashed bright against skies that had become dark as night. Water washed over the rails, drenching the crew and leaving the deck slippery and dangerous. Mickey helped the quartermaster lash the wheel into place. The power of the wind could rip the wheel out of the helmsman's hand, making them a bobbing barrel on the ocean. The wind howled as if determined to blow her off her feet. The rain began then, sluicing down as heavy as a waterfall. The men were already drenched, but with the wind and the rain and the slippery decks, It was too risky to stay above.
Get the rest of the men below!
She yelled at Mickey while she fought to get to the helm. She sent the helmsman below as well, and lashed herself to the wheel, the place for the captain while riding out a gale. Her father had always done the same. More than one night, as a child, she'd huddled in the cabin and sent up prayers for her father's safety. Every time, he had brought the ship through the storm. The rain poured so hard she could barely draw a breath through the thick wall of water. The wind lashed at her, the ship rolled, and keeping to her feet became a matter of sheer muscle and willpower. If she hadn't been tied on, she could have easily been blown off the ship. The storm blew on through the night as she rode out the squall and kept watch over her ship. A time or two, waves taller than she was, slashed her off her feet. She struggled to breathe through the wall of water as she dragged herself upright and hung on again, willing herself and her ship to survive the night. The gypsy doll held. When at last the rain and wind slowed, Gina slumped over the wheel, unable to stand on her own. Minutes later, Mickey showed up.
"She made it through,"
Gina mumbled, her voice sounding tired even to her own ears. She fumbled with the rope around her body, the knots wet and tight.
"Aye, Captain, that she did."
He helped her loosen and remove the rope. Gripping her arm, he guided her down the steps of the helm into her cabin. Her numb legs shook with every step.
"Inspect the damage," she told him. "Get us back on course and keep a lookout for the Ladana."
"Aye, Captain, that I'll do."
She stumbled into her cabin and sank into the chair to tug off her soaked boots. She had to rest after that effort. Once recovered, she stripped off her rain slicker, then her sodden clothes, wiped dry with her linen towel, and dropped onto her bunk. Immediately she fell into a deep sleep. She didn't know how long had passed when Mickey banged on her door to wake her.
"Ship ahead, Captain."
She blinked, tried to remember why sun was streaming through her porthole, and she was lying on her bunk naked. The long night of the storm came rushing back. Muscles sore and protesting, she struggled out of bed, pulled on some dry clothes, and limped onto deck.
"Is it the Ladana?"
she asked, eager for news of Charles.
"Nay, she is too big."
"No sight of the Ladana, then?"
Mickey shook his head. Disappointment attacked her, angling toward despair. Had the Ladana been lost? Were Charles and his crew now on the bottom of the ocean? Panic threatened, until she realized such thoughts would only make her ineffective as a captain and a danger to her men. Needing to be alert and decisive, she pushed concern for Charles and his ship aside.
"Can you see any markings on the ship?"
Mickey passed her the telescope.
"Nay, she's too far away."
Gina put the telescope to her eye. The ship was still so far away it looked smaller than a child's toy. And yet she could tell by the design it wasn't the Ladana. She turned slowly to look in different directions. The sun was high in the sky, the sea as calm as if the storm had never passed. With such a clear view, it was easy to see there were no other ships in sight. Chances looked good the gypsy doll would be going up against the Spanish ship alone.
"Slow us down, Mickey. We'll sit and wait until we're certain who she is, and give Captain Charles and his crew a chance to catch up."
She refused to think anything other than he'd be there as they planned.
"Just as well if they think we're damaged from the storm."
"Look out," Gina called to the sailor in the crow's nest. "Keep alert for the Ladana."
"We going after the Spanish if Captain Charles doesn't make it in time?"
Mickey asked. And there was the rub. Was this the right ship? If so, could she engage a Spanish warship on her own? Gina paced the deck as the sun lowered in the sky. Still no sign of Charles, while the ship on the horizon loomed larger, close enough now that she could say for certain it was indeed a Spanish ship. Chances were good it was the prey they were seeking. At this rate, since dark was falling, they'd pass it in the night. Where was the Ladana?
We need her to slow even more, Gina told Mickey. Hoist our Spanish flag half-mast. Make her think we're damaged and need help. Light the lanterns.
The dark would work in their favor. Though it was a moonlit night, the Spanish vision would be limited enough to be unable to tell they weren't really damaged. And they should slow down to help. She hoped Charles caught up with them during the night. But she couldn't afford to let the ship pass while waiting on Charles. She'd never be able to catch up to it. The night dragged on. Gina kept her lookouts changed and rested on 2-hour shifts so they wouldn't miss anything. And as the Spanish ship drew closer, she kept her commands low and quiet so her voice wouldn't carry across the water. Gina strode along the railing, keeping her gaze on the ship in the distance, knowing the chances were high she'd have to go into this battle alone. So far, the ship seemed to be slowing. Had they seen the Spanish flag flying half-mast and now, as good countrymen, planned to help as she expected? As dawn broke, she gave Mickey an order.
Have the gunners make a weapons check and make it quiet.
Aye.
The gunner scurried below to the cannon, quieter than shipboard mice. The Spanish ship was close enough now she could tell it was their target.
Everyone ready and in position, she instructed.
Her men fell into their roles. This was something they were familiar with. Whether it was playing an injured ship or simply two ships passing, they knew what to do to lure unsuspecting prey. This was the first time since her father had been a privateer that she expected an all-out battle. As a captain, she had no experience in a firefight, but her father had given her tips on how to win. The Spanish ship sailed closer, and Gina moved to stand between the helmsmen.
Pull alongside her, mate. We'll get her good and close before we show our guns.
The air hovered with tension. Mickey stood beside her, ready to run and deliver the order to show the guns. The Spanish ship crawled closer.
Ready? Now go, Mickey, and send Eduardo to me.
He trotted off to give the order. Soon enough, she heard the flaps lift and knew the cannon were being pushed through the portholes. Mickey came huffing back, the Spanish-born crewman alongside him ready to translate. Just then the latest lookout scurried from the crow's nest and told her another ship was on the horizon. She breathed a sigh, hopeful it was the LaDonna.
"Hoist the colors," she said to Mickey,
and then as the Spanish ship drew up alongside, she called out in Spanish.
"Captain, surrender and prepare to be boarded."
The Spanish captain, resplendent in his red waistcoat with blue breeches and jacket, chuckled. Quivering his dark goatee and mustache, he called out,
"A lady captain."
She was used to being mocked as a woman captain and ignored his amusement, holding firm with her command. When she didn't respond to his laughter, he called out,
"I think not, lady captain."
With that pronouncement, the Spanish captain gave the order to prepare his guns, her interpreter told her. The captain of the Spanish ship turned back to her.
"Prepare to be boarded yourself.
Face off." Charles paced along the deck of his ship, cursing the wind that had blown them off course, but was now too late to get him back to the gypsy doll. He could row the ship faster if he had an oar. And what if the gypsy doll had been blown off course, too? Would he be able to find her? Find the Spanish ship? What if she found the Spanish ship first? She'd be facing a heavily armed ship alone. He growled his frustration and paced faster. She was an experienced pirate, but the nature of pirating was to pick on weaker, smaller ships, not go up against a ship armed for war. Facing a galleon armed with as many guns or more than your own took a lot of nerve. Maybe that doll magic would work and somehow keep her safe.
"Ships ahead, Captain,"
his crewman called down from the lookout.
"Ships. More than one."
Charles scurried up to the crow's nest.
"Two of them, Captain. Dead ahead."
He handed Charles the telescope.
"One's the gypsy doll. She's flying with colors, and the other is likely the Spanish ship.
With that smoke hovering, I'd say they're in a battle," he added.
As Charles peered through the scope, focusing on the two ships, his heart jumped into his throat.
"Fire!"
Gina called. The smoke and noise from the booming cannon rumbled through her body.
"Keep the aim above the waterline. We don't want her to sink."
A cannonball crashed through the railing, just below the helm.
"Helmsman, bring her about. I want closer."
She wanted to board and take the battle hand to hand to save her ship the blasting.
"Mickey, keep the gunners firing as we come about. I want to check on the Ladana."
She remembered the way he'd snuck up so fast the last time. She hoped his ship was as quick today. She climbed up to the crow's nest and saw the Ladana was definitely approaching full sail.
"Hurry up, you fast little ship," she muttered.
Minutes crawled by while the gypsy doll came about, this time pulling up alongside the Spanish ship. She could almost jump across. And now the Ladana was so close, Gina could see her without the telescope. Confidence buoying her, she called the order.
"Throw the hooks, men, let's board."
With intimidating yells, her men tossed the grappling hooks, threw down planks, and stormed the Spaniard's deck. Gina pulled her sword and followed. Steel clashed on steel. The sounds of metal hitting metal rang over the deck. Men's dying cries and triumphant shouts added to the noise. The smell of blood sailed on the sea breeze. Gina's arm ached as she battled the Spanish sailors, whose numbers seemed to increase. She'd slash one down and another would take his place. Her men had big hearts and a fighting spirit, but they were slowly being overwhelmed by the skill of trained swordsmen. A loud boom shook her. The Spanish ship was still firing, and at this close range there was no missing. She twirled and looked back at the gypsy doll. A hole gaped in her side, but still above the waterline. It wouldn't take much adjustment to hit below the water, and the Spanish captain had no need not to sink her ship.
"Fight harder, men! We must take them!"
She yelled and redoubled her efforts, slashing and slicing, no matter that her sword arm felt tired enough to fall off. She had to get control of the ship before they sank the gypsy doll. Slash, 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 parry, thrust. Her heart pounded. Her lungs ached with the exertion. They needed help. Charles had lowered his ship's dinghies into the water, men rowing to reach the fight faster. She thought he was standing at the front of the first one, urging his men to row faster. Still, she had to reach the captain. She rammed forward through the crush of fighting men as another cannon shot shook the deck. Mickey could order the gypsy doll to fire back, but it would be useless. She didn't want to sink this ship with all the gold on board. She was leading with her sword, cleaving her way through, when she saw Charles scramble over the side railing. Their eyes met. He called, "Gina, behind you." She whirled, blocking a blow that would have run her through. The sword went wide, but not wide enough. It ripped through her shirt, the edge cutting her waist as her opponent pulled his sword free. Gina stumbled. Damnation, but that hurt. Acting on instinct, she ran the soldier through before he recovered his footing, then pushed him off her sword with her foot. Charles joined her, alarm in his eyes.
"How bad?"
She held onto her burning side.
"Just a slice, not terrible."
"It's bleeding freely, though."
"Step aside."
She shoved him aside and blocked a blow aimed at his back. Charles spun and sliced neatly through the soldier's neck with his broadsword. Blood spurted as he fell.
"Keep watch,"
Charles told her. The stench of blood grew stronger. The deck would surely be running red soon. Unceremoniously, Charles turned the dead soldier over and hacked off a piece of the man's jacket and shirt tail.
"He won't need these,"
Charles said as he stood and looked around.
"Here, turn this way."
He pulled her shirt up, did a quick survey of the gash.
"You really need to be sewn up, but no time."
He folded the cloth and placed it over the wound. She flinched at the pain, but stayed still.
"Hold this."
While she pressed the square of shirt over her wound, he folded the strip of jacket and placed it on top of the linen shirt to make a thicker pad.
"Hold that, too."
He pulled his belt free, wrapped it around her waist, and tied it tightly to hold the makeshift bandage in place.
Another boom. The ball hit her ship again. Still above the waterline, but the gypsy doll was going to need extensive repairs. Each hit to her ship felt like a blow to her stomach. The pain from her wound paled in comparison.
Thanks.
Her heart stuck in her throat. She grabbed him.
Come on. We've got to get to the captain and stop those gunners before they sink my ship.
They pushed through the fighting men, engaged swords when they couldn't avoid it, but focused on getting to the captain. Close to the quarterdeck, she saw the horsemen and had a better idea, especially when her gaze landed on Eduardo, her Spanish-speaking crewman.
Charles,
she called over the noise of clanking steel and yelling men.
Keep after the captain. I have another idea.
Fuego! They were close enough to hear the Spanish captain shouting orders. Another boom. She didn't understand Spanish, but there was no mistaking that order had been to fire on her ship. She looked in time to see the ball blast below the water. Her stomach sank, as surely as her ship would sink if they didn't stop those cannon shots.
Charles, the gypsy doll!
How many hits like that could her ship take? Charles met her look. The alarm she felt echoed in his eyes. More of his men had reached the ship. Their sheer numbers were turning the battle to a defeat of the Spaniards. But would it be in time?
Hurry, go!
She urged Charles onward, then searched for Eduardo again.
Eduardo!
She yelled and motioned.
Come with me.
He waved to signal he had heard her, and she took off after the Spanish ship's hornsman. She sheathed her sword, pulled out her knife, and came up behind her prey. She held the blade to his neck and felt him begin to shake.
Eduardo, she said, tell him to play the signal to stop the battle.
Her side throbbed and the knife felt heavy, but she held it steady at the Spaniard's throat. The man shook so badly, she didn't know if he could blow his horn. After 2 weak attempts, he finally managed to give the signal. The soldiers stopped. The sound even startled the captain, allowing Charles to disarm him with a sword slice upward. The captain stood with his hands up, clearly conceding defeat.
Spanish soldiers, your captain is our prisoner. Drop your weapons.
Eduardo translated Gina's words. Still, the soldiers hesitated, all eyes turned to the captain. Charles prodded the man with the tip of his broadsword and said something in Spanish. Her eyebrows rose. She didn't realize Charles spoke Spanish. He must have learned when he was their prisoner. The captain, encouraged by the large sword at his belly, repeated the order. The Spanish soldiers dropped their swords.
Pirates, gather the weapons, take them in below.
Gina,
Charles called, her gaze went to him.
The gypsy doll.
She looked behind her. An indescribable agony launched an assault on her heart.
My ship,
she whispered, barely able to comprehend what she was seeing. The gypsy doll was sinking. Chapter 7
Gina, come guard the captain. Eduardo, help her.
Charles called.
What?
Gina asked, but he had no time to explain. Instead, he left her with a hard, fast kiss.
I'll be back.
He ran through the crowd, dodging pirates as they herded Spanish soldiers. Grabbing a couple of his crewmen, he directed,
"Cut the ropes, the gypsy doll is sinking."
If they didn't get the Spanish ship free and moving out of the way, the gypsy doll would suck the Spanish ship under with her. He found his first mate.
"John, make sure she's cut free and sail the ship away."
"Captain, what are you doing?"
"Something I have to get off the gypsy doll."
"Captain?"
Charles didn't take time for explanations. He'd written all the information he'd collected on that doll. He couldn't lose her. He climbed on the rail and dove into the water. Water swooshed around him as he went down, down. His eardrums felt like they were going to explode. He turned and kicked, heading back to the surface. His head broke free and he gasped air. The skeleton crew left behind on the gypsy doll was abandoning the ship. No one would get in his way. He swam to the ship and climbed aboard.
"Captain, are you daft?"
one of the crewmen asked.
"Something I have to save. Get aboard the Spanish ship."
The gypsy doll was sinking fast.
Water was almost up to the railing. He hurried to Gina's cabin, thankful the captain's quarters were on deck and not below. Water dripped off every footstep. He burst into a room and grabbed the doll, but he needed a way to keep her dry. He found Gina's rain slicker, rolled the doll up in it. He reached for his belt, then remembered it was wrapped around Gina's waist, and had a moment of concern for her. Had the bleeding stopped? Was she getting weak from the blood loss? The ship shifted, throwing him off balance. Hurry. Searching the room, he found a shirt and used it to tie the bundle, then tied the sleeves of the shirt around his waist, leaving his hands free for the swim back to the Spanish ship. Water already covered the deck and sloshed over his feet. He had to hurry. If he was too close when she went under, he'd be sucked down in the whirlpool to a watery grave. His heart rate furious, he hopped onto the rail, dove off, and swam for everything he was worth. Gina's head was spinning. She wasn't sure if it was from blood loss or from what Captain Gomez, the Spanish captain, had just told her. Mickey, who had joined her from the gypsy doll, for once was struck speechless. The captain, vain and arrogant, sat in his desk chair looking completely at ease. She and Mickey had taken him to his office to guard, until Charles returned, while her men kept watch on the Spanish sailors and soldiers below deck.
"I find it quite amusing, Señorita Capitan, that you have lost your ship for nothing. Bad information you had, no? Or were you deliberately misled?"
"Shut up," she snapped, "or I'll cut your flapping tongue."
He smiled, laced his fingers across his stomach, but wisely kept quiet. She tried not to think about what he'd told her. There was no gold on this ship, only munitions and supplies for their troops. Had Charles's information been wrong? Or had he a purpose led her astray? If that were true, then why? Regardless, her ship, the gypsy doll, was sinking into the depths of the ocean. The thought made her breath catch painfully in her throat. That was her father's original ship. He'd never had one sunk from beneath him. Now she'd lost it, and lost the doll. So much for any protective spell. Although Gina herself was safe, she felt as though her heart had been pierced with a sharp sword. Her father would be so disappointed. Mickey stepped the length of the captain's cabin back and forth, back and forth. But she hadn't the energy to do more than stand, propped against a bulkhead, struggling to breathe through the enormity of what had happened.
"Spain will not take kindly to lowly pirates sailing one of her ships."
"Spain won't know what happens if I toss all of you overboard," she growled.
"If ye had not been such a piss-poor captain, we would not have captured your ship,"
Mickey added to the arrogant oath.
"Captain Charles set you up,"
the Spanish captain continued, with obviously no regard for his well-being, or else he doubted her ability to cut out his tongue. She pulled her knife.
"Hold him, Mickey. His tongue becomes offensive to me."
Captain Gomez tried to scramble out of the chair, but Mickey was faster. Before she could reach him, the door flew open. Charles, wet and bedraggled, entered with some sort of pack tied around his waist.
"What is it you risked life and limb to get off a sinking ship?" she blurted.
"Ah, good, I'm not too late for the party." "Señor Charles, I've heard much about you the last few years. You've done well for yourself since we last met."
Gina turned a questioning gaze to Charles, who ignored her. Instead, his jaw clenched and the veins in his neck bulged as he focused on the Spaniard. A halo of steam hovered in the air around him.
"Are you happy now?"
Captain Gomez continued.
"We are even, no? You have captured my ship."
"I won't be happy until you rot in that hellhole where you left me."
The captain chuckled.
"That will never happen."
"Don't be sure. I have your ship, and now I have the opportunity to pay you back for this scar, along with everything else."
Gina's gaze went to the scar on his face. She'd grown so used to it, she'd mostly forgotten it. "Not Charles." He pulled his sword. Gina still gripped her knife.
Charles.
She felt as though she'd walked in late on a Shakespeare play. But she was fast catching up. He and Captain Gomez obviously had a long-standing adversity. Once again, Charles ignored her as he stalked over to the captain. Was he really going to attack an unarmed man?
This is about revenge.
Her anger rose.
You knew there was no treasure on this ship. You lied to me.
She held her knife, ready to carve him like a roast suckling.
I lost my ship for nothing.
Charles didn't take his focus off the captain.
You have this ship now.
This ship is not my gypsy doll. It's not the ship I grew up on. This ship has no meaning for me, and now I must keep sailing on this stupid foreign ship. I don't even get to spend my father's last years with him.
The rising hysteria in her voice served to catch his attention at last. He turned, eyeing her warily.
Gina, I see the captain's mouth has been running.
You lied to me.
And no doubt betted you to seal the deal.
The Spanish captain's laugh made her feel foolish and gullible. She narrowed her gaze and lunged with her knife. Charles blocked with his sword and knocked her knife away. She pulled her sword. His face showed he took her seriously.
Gina, wait.
You used me for revenge.
No.
She thrust, he blocked. With each move, he only sidestepped and parried, never attacking. He let her go after him until she tired, lightheaded. She stumbled. He easily could have run her through.
Gina, you're bleeding again, love. Stop.
One last lunge. She could finish him off. One last lunge. The room spun. Somehow her sword clanked to the floor. Her world went black. Gina awoke later in a dimly lit room, in a bed not her own. Confusion made her frown. Then she remembered. The gypsy doll. Charles. Betrayal. All for nothing. She closed her eyes and tried to pretend none of this had happened. But it didn't work. Her heart clenched. She twisted her head to look around, then immediately regretted the move. Her head felt stuffed full of linen and ready to explode. She caught something out of the corner of her eye. This time she turned her head more slowly. Rosa? Awkwardly, she reached to pick her up. How did she get here? Gina held onto the doll. Charles must have gone back for her. No one else other than Mickey knew how important Rosa was to her. And Mickey had no doll on him when he came aboard the Spanish ship. It was hard to imagine Charles risking his life for a piece of whalebone. But she remembered the pack tied around his waist. Had the doll been in there? Charles. She closed her eyes. Had he used her, betrayed her? All for revenge? Why didn't he tell her? If he had, would she have helped? Would she have willingly put her ship and her men at risk for nothing? When she had a father to depend on her? No, she couldn't have done it. No matter what Charles owed the Spanish captain. She hugged the doll, briefly regretting there'd be no child of her own. Rarely had she thought of children, knowing she'd have to sail the seas until she was too old to sail any longer. She'd probably meet her death on the sea. But for a time, thinking they were after a treasure, and she'd be able to retire, she'd allowed herself to hope. She sighed. She'd loved Charles since she was a child. How could she have misread him so? Her father had trusted him. Had the years so much changed the boy she'd known? Sadly enough, her heart still loved him. She still wanted to believe. She picked up the doll and looked at her. Totally useless doll. Protected her maybe, but what was the use? There was no protection against disease, no protection against sinking ships, no protection against heartbreak. She didn't believe Charles had meant her harm. Otherwise he'd be dead according to the curse. But wait. Who said Charles was not dead?
She was in this room alone. She had no idea who was on the other side of the door. She pushed upright, looked for a sword, a weapon of any kind. All she could find was... The door opened. She tensed, weaponless, injured.
What are you doing sitting up?
Lie back, love. She sank back in relief. Charles. He came over and urged her to lie back down.
You need to rest. That's a nasty wound you got.
She looked down and for the first time noticed her shirt had been hacked away, and there was a clean bandage on her wound. Still, all she could think to say was,
Why?
I had to bandage you. You were bleeding quite profusely after you tried to run me through with your sword. One couldn't blame you, of course.
Why?
She wanted to ask, Why did you betray me? But couldn't. She wasn't strong enough to hear the answer. Instead, she asked,
Why did you go back to get the doll?
Because, love, she is our treasure.
He took the doll, turned her around, and flipped up her skirts. Surprisingly, there were marks on her back.
How did these get here?
Gina looked closer. A map?
Not just any map, a treasure map.
Why is there a treasure?
I needed a safe place. I thought she would protect your ship. Obviously, I was wrong. I'm sorry.
She supposedly protects me. I wasn't on the ship.
Ah, that's how it works. Well, I couldn't lose her after all the time I spent tracking down the information.
Tracking down? Surely not all those meetings I caught you in with those men. That man who warned me. He knew there was no treasure on this ship.
That's not entirely true. There is gold on this ship. The captain lied to you. But I know where there is much more.
So why did we waste time with the ship?
The captain is a sadistic bastard. He's the one who bought me when I was shanghaied. And yes, he did give me this scar. He took us to an island, a sweltering hellhole. We worked in his gold mines. Not many survived. The location was kept secret, and there was only one way off the island, since the waters were shark-infested. Death.
So how did you get off?
I died, of course.
You died?
Charles shrugged. I made them think I did. Two men died, another man and I, the man you met, buried their bodies in the middle of the night, and took their place in the sack aboard the ship.
But where'd he take the bodies? Why not bury them?
He didn't want the dead bodies littering his island, I suppose. Superstitious chap, ghosts and all that.
You're joking.
Thankfully for me, I am not. When the ship set sail, we were wrapped in that sack. It felt like we were suffocating.
Charles paused and a shudder rippled through him.
We were stalled in the hold of the ship. We freed ourselves and took over the ship. By the time we were in charge...
Just you and another man took over a ship?
It was a small ship.
It was night.
Hardly a crew. How many crewmen do you need to guard dead bodies, after all? It wasn't hard to capture the ship, but by the time we did, we were lost among the islands. We finally made it to open sea.
What about star charts?
None. Small ship. It only ran between the islands to dump the bodies.
What does all this have to do with the Spanish captain?
It's his island. Apparently he acquired it in service to the Spanish crown. He'd visit occasionally, planned to retire there when his military service was over.
How do you know so much?
I made it my business to know. When I escaped, I found a crew and sailed to England and told the king what I knew. I became an agent, tracking this bloke. When the war broke out, knowledge was valuable. The captain has a long list of crimes and a nice reward on his worthless hide.
Charles walked away a few steps, then turned to face her.
When I found out about your father, I decided to try to find the way back to the island to get some of that gold, so you wouldn't have to live a life at sea.
What? Why?
He came forward, took her hands, and fell to a knee beside the bed. His hands felt warm against hers.
I've always loved you, Gina. Letting you go off to school was the hardest thing I'd ever done. But you deserved an education, a chance for a good life, not to be married to someone who lived on the sea.
You loved?
The cards fell favorably. I saw an opportunity to capture the captain and take his gold as well.
The other man? What of him?
He's been well paid by England. He wasn't a sailor when he was shanghaied, and he never wants to step foot on a ship again. He's content with his bottle.
So wait, you're working for England? There is a reward for this captain, plus you know where the Island of Gold is.
Her head spun with all the information. Yes, indeed. Charles moved to sit on the edge of her bed and dropped kisses on her fingers. And now we have a Spanish warship to go get it. In addition, I believe I can wrangle a land grant for us.
Little spurts of pleasure shot through her at each kiss on her fingers, but she managed to say, "The island?"
He grimaced and stopped kissing. The less I see of that hellhole, the better. I was thinking more of the colonies, perhaps. The king is trying to populate that land. Perhaps we can help with a child or two of our own.
She had to close her eyes. She needed time to take in all he was telling her.
You're speechless. He laughed lightly. I can't believe it.
At last she opened her eyes and met his gaze. I don't know what to say.
How about if I ask if you want to help me storm an island, steal some gold, then run away and be my wife? And you'll say...
Yes, she answered. I'll say yes.
Pirate's Proposal by Diana Lane. Narrated by Rebecca Lynch.